This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And of course, as we do each and every year, paying remembrance to the great Martin Luther King Jr. on his birthday. So, shout out there, I guess. But as always, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Yes, it is. It's the actual birthday of the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., January 15th. Obviously, the holiday is every third Monday in January, but this year it actually happened to be his actual birthday, January 15th. So, to his family, of course, as always. 50 years it's been now since his terrible day in Memphis in 68. As a matter of fact, today Lakers played Memphis and the Grizzlies, you know, because, you know, thanks to Nike, they have to have 57 fucking jerseys per team. They have like the alternate, and their alternate jersey, it just says Memphis with a, it's a white jersey with Memphis in black letters and a line under it, and it's a tribute to the Memphis men's sanitation strike, which was actually Dr. King's last like big thing before he was senselessly murdered. So they had that today, and they actually beat the Lakers today. So yes, and of course Vince, I didn't see the beginning of Raw, but I'm assuming Vince did his normal Dr. King tribute as he does every year. But this is the episode 478 of the, as he is, the gold standard. Before we let's introduce our the third member of the Trinity today, JR, for our show before we get into your very unique holiday today. Why don't we bring in our third guy?
That is straight out of Vancouver. It's been a little bit, I feel like, since we've talked to him. It is Vancouver, right, Kelly Nelson? Yeah, it is, right?
Yeah, more or less. Okay. Well, I live in the suburbs, but yeah, let's consider it Vancouver.
All of Canada is a suburb, so.
Hey, Kelly Nelson, of course, of WorldCast and formerly of Titans of Wrestling, as Pete would say. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy
Same
New Year.
To you. Same to you.
That's right. We haven't had you on since day after Christmas.
It was, Boxing Day. Well, in Boxing Canada, Day. It's called Boxing Day.
Yes.
So it was a unique day. It started oddly too, because I took part in a water aerobics class at the gym. My wife and her mother take this class every Monday.
This has a Curbs episode written all
they
over
like
it.
They like it, but it's a lot of older women. She's been asking me. She kept saying like, "Oh, you should take the class, and then I can take my son for a swim lesson." And I'm like, "All right, I'll do it." And I bought it. I did the whole thing. So that was already kind of an odd start to the day. And then I took my son to the Providence game tonight. It's the first time I've actually taken him alone. And it was going to be – I knew it was going to be packed because it's a big game and it's a holiday. So I was already a little weary to take him, but he did okay. So we go to – I went to go maybe park on the street, but it was really cold out. And, Scott, as you know, it's a little bit of a walk from, like, the street into either the mall or the game. And they also have meters there now, so I was like going back and forth. I'm like, I don't know if the holiday meters are on, and if I park on the street, it's going to be like $10, whereas if I park in the mall, it's only like $2. So I'm like, all right, fuck it, I'll just go to the mall. So I go park in my usual spot in the basement of the mall. I wait for a senior and for the cowboy, and we go to Uno. And already there, like, the night's off to a shaky start because this waitress we have is a train wreck. And we got there early. I mean, we gave ourselves like a good, you know, hour and 45 minutes to eat and walk over to the game. And she's a mess. And I was upset because I ordered a Cobb salad. They ran out of avocado. That already set me on the wrong path.
Ugh.
So she's like, she botches the bill, like all this shit, right? So now we're hustling. We hustle over to the game and we get there right before tip. And my aggravation goes up because last year, in previous years, the Dunkin' Donuts Center had free Wi-Fi. And now this year they got rid of it. And they have this other thing where you get like 30 minutes free and then you could pay for additional, which is nonsense. And normally I wouldn't care. I don't need the Wi-Fi. I have data. But the data reception sucks in there. Like, it's trash.
It does.
So it's really fucking aggravating, right? So this all spirals into halftime, where my dad gets a text from my mom somehow. It took a while to go through, saying there's a shooting at the Providence Place Mall garage where I'm parked, and that the mall was evacuated and locked down. So I'm like, oh, this is fucking great. So I'm at the game. My car is in this garage that's shut down, along with everyone else's car. And I can't get any updates. So I do the 30 minutes free bullshit Wi-Fi again. I'm trying to get all the updates I can in with everyone. I message you and Kelly saying, I don't know when the fuck I'm going to be out of here. You know, texting my wife, texting my mom. And, like, news is slowly starting to drip out. Now, as that's going on, chaos brouhaha breaks out in the section next to me where some guy got hammered, threw up, and fell down, and the police had to come escort him out. So that's going on. My son's asleep. He fell asleep on senior, who then passed him to my dad. So he's out cold, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So we're wondering if I'm getting smattering of messages. Like, Jeff Machado's texting me trying to help me out with info, and like we're trying to get any info I can. And the Dunk is not saying anything. They're not announcing anything, and I'm not able to get much because the Wi-Fi I'm not paying, and the data is not working. And from what I could gather, someone was shot on the second floor of the garage outside of Nordstrom, because the Nordstrom employees heard it, and the shooter or shooters were at large, and that's why the garage was closed. There was word at one point that they were searching every car that exited. Like, just all this stuff was going on. So with like 4 minutes left, they make an announcement finally inside the Dunk, and they're like, oh, bad news. The Providence police have completely shut down the garage. You can wait here until they're open. So now I'm like, oh, fucking A. So my dad had come, and him and his friends parked out on that side street, which I had talked about earlier. So his friend happened to have a car seat for his grandchild, and they're like, all right, well, why don't you just come with us, and I'll just, you know, my dad was going to take me back to the garage later to get my car. So I'm like, it's going to be a shit show anyway when it opens up. So that was my plan. So with a minute left, like right as the game is ending pretty much, not even a minute left, it's like the game, the buzzer goes off. They say, oh, you can now go get your cars. You just can't walk through the mall. You have to go outside and up into one of the entrances and you can get your car. So I'm like, oh, shit. All right. So do I tote my son, you know, into some mess that I'm not sure of what's going on? Or do I have my dad take him? So my dad's going to take him and I'm just going to go get my car. And then I'm like, all right, well, now I feel bad for my dad, who's like, you know, he's in good shape, but he's 71. I'm like, now he's going to carry my hoss of a fucking son all through the streets of Providence on his own. So I'm like, all right, I'll take him. So I proceed to carry my son from my section of the Dunk, like all the way around the convention center, up around the mall. I mean, it's a good, like, probably at least 15-minute hike in the freezing cold weather. And he's like 40 fucking pounds of just solid beef. Like, he's not fat. He is just, like, just stocky, like, just built. And I am like dying.
It's like carrying a turkey.
Oh my god! It's like carrying a steroided fucking Don Morocco turkey. This fucking guy. So I'm carrying him.
Oh god!
All around the street, and luckily we're able to go in up the exit ramp where we park, and it was actually the quickest exit I've ever had out of the mall. So it worked out okay. Last I checked, I don't think they still haven't caught this guy. And the mall still closed down. So it was chaos. It was crazy. Luckily I'm home. We made it out okay, and PC won. So at the end of the day, it was a good story, but it was crazy for a few minutes there. And I'm more aggravated about the fucking Wi-Fi than anything else.
Yeah, that's odd. I never. It's every venue, every arena has free Wi-Fi. I don't. Either they don't have it, or they do have it, and it's free. I've never heard of an arena make you pay for it. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And
yeah, I don't think it's even them, honestly. I think it's actually the convention center that has the paid Wi-Fi that you pick up, because it said it may be going through like a convention center login. So I don't know what the hell it was, but it was really, I don't even care about the Wi-Fi necessarily if the data just worked, you know what I mean? Like I couldn't do anything. Right. My phone. And it's not like that every game. I think because it was pretty much like sold out, it's just, there's so many people in there, it's just getting jammed up. But right. I mean, I feel like in something like this, have your finger on the pulse, open the Wi-Fi up for everyone, like make it free so people can figure out what's going on. It was very confusing and frustrating because word is, you know, filtering through all the sections and everything else. It's just shit like that. Like, just be on the ball, like let people know what's going on so they can figure it out. It was very confusing.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you could be at the game. I mean, think about it. I mean, thank God this wasn't the case, but I mean, you could be at the game with Alex and, you know, Megan and Juliana could be at the mall and, you know, families could be at the mall while people are at the game. I mean, that makes no sense. There's no doubt they should have kind of opened that up to people and, you know, made it a little easier.
Right, so I'm getting texts.
That's ludicrous.
I'm getting texts that I wasn't getting. They were texting me and I couldn't respond.
Yeah, it's crazy. And again, at least all is well that ends well. You crawled through the pipes with the glass in your feet like John McClane to get to your car.
Yeah, yes.
And the Friars did win. They beat Butler 70-60, so a win's a win. That's good.
Yeah.
Third place. Now, Kelly, you know, the malls, obviously they're open-air malls where you are with a lot of moose hunters and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we haven't got that far yet to have roofs on our malls. Next year, maybe.
That's the Canadian version of deer hunter, moose hunter.
Moose hunter, yeah.
Stars out.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than when the Bruins shut out the Canucks in Game 7 in 2011. I'm sure I wouldn't want to be at a mall there, but anyway.
It was pretty hot that night, that's for sure.
The day also was kind of somber in a way as well, because Cranberry's lead singer, Dolores O'Riordan, and I looked that up, how to pronounce, so I didn't fuck it up, passed away, sadly, 43, I think, right?
46.
46, yeah. So
46.
You know, sad, obviously, day. They were talking about it on Lithium when I caught that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, either of you guys big Cranberries fans at all?
Not really. I mean, I was a June. I'm trying to think what time of year in '93 Linger came out. I think it came out in the summer, so I guess it was my junior year in college. It was all over the fucking radio, and my college radio station, WNHU, played that album all the time, but we were like the kind of underground indie, so we didn't play Linger. We played everything else on it.
Right.
But it was a big – that was a huge song in 90 – right? I think it was 93.
Yeah, it was 93, 94, something like that.
Yeah, it was either late 93 or early 94. I was pretty sure it came out in summer of 93. I'll have to look it up. But, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan, but, I mean, they were in the consciousness when I was in college. Because that was their first big album. They were a big breakthrough band in the early 90s. I don't know, Kel, were you big into them?
No, not really. I mean, Linger's a great song, and I was big into the grunge scene at the time and all that, so it was part of that.
This picture Kelly was plaid, fucking long hair.
Yeah, a lot of plaid, for sure. But it was bought from the Gap, so I was a
expensive flannel.
Grunge
didn't get to where you were until 2004.
So. No, he was on the cutting edge of grunge. He was right there.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was in California.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, so it's water. Yeah.
No, it was big as soon as Nirvana hit. But Cranberries, Linger, like I said, great song. Zombie, not so much. That's a song I've never liked. But yeah, it's sad when someone passed away so young.
Have they said anything yet about how?
I don't think so. I mean, at 46, I hope it's not. You know, something like that. Let's pray. You know, 46-year-old. I mean, I don't know if there was any health issues, obviously, but let's see.
Yeah, just that she died unexpectedly. No details have been released, so that's it.
Yeah, died suddenly. Let's see. This is the.
Well, it said she had health issues last year because they canceled the tour. And she hadn't progressed enough to participate, so I don't know. I'm not sure.
She was in a hotel in London. Mm. Said officers were called at 9 a.m. to a hotel where a woman in her 40s was found dead. The police force said the death is unexplained. The Hilton Hotel on London's Park Lane confirmed that a guest had died on the premises. She was born in 1971. When did Linger come out? I'm now curious.
93.
Yeah, it was 93 because their debut album, everybody else is doing it, so why can't we? And yeah, Linger came out that year, so. Mm-hmm. Then they split up. She was in a band called Must, something like that. And the Cranberries kept going on like their own. Mm. But she was in another. Oh, it says she was one of Ireland's richest women, but she struggled with both physical and mental health problems. So okay. I'm sure it was something. So anyway, all right. So once we hear something, we'll let you know. But Dolores O'Riordan dead at the age of way too young age of 46.
And of course, anyway. We'll hear some Cranberries throughout the night here in and out.
Yes. Yes, we will.
So also, before we get started, I also just want to take a moment. Policeman Nation did lose one of their own as well over the weekend.
Yes.
The passing of our good friend Wes Mayle. You may know him from when we did our podcast on King of the Ring 1993, Wesley. It was, you know, obviously crazy how we were contacted by him and his sister. It was actually the night I was in the hospital when my son was being born, and my wife is on the table, you know, getting like checked as we first got admitted, and I'm like marking out, telling her about these emails I got, and she's looking at me like I'm a fucking crazy. So Wes did come on the podcast with his sister Kendra, talked all about King of the Ring 93 and his experience as a wrestling fan, and had been part of our community ever since, you know, for the last 3 years. was in our fantasy football league, fantasy baseball league, part of the chat pages, and always weighed in there. We found out over the weekend they had passed away, very young, very sad. So I just wanted to, of course, pay our respects and condolences to Wes and remember him here tonight.
I had a great story. Last year he was in our football league, and he's in our football league the last 2 years, and he had never used PayPal. So I spent one night talking back and forth with him on Facebook Messenger, trying to sign up him for PayPal so he could fit. It was funny. We were talking about wrestling. It was pretty funny. He was a funny guy. It was very sad. So again, our condolences to his family, and a tough one. So not an easy last few days here at Place B Nation, but we'll try to make you all smile mm-hmm. on this Martin Luther King Day.
Here to entertain, pal.
Yeah. He should have done a West thing at the beginning of Raw. Well, I'll do something at the beginning of our show. All right, now we reached the end of our gauntlet, which we talked about back in May, of our 5-show run in our house, the world's most famous arena. So let us go back in time tonight to September 21st, 1987, the final of our 5 straight house shows from the building on 33rd Street, Madison Square Garden in New York City. Now, we know, and Kel, this is your first show since May, the May show, I believe?
It was June, actually.
June. Our Pete was on in July, and of course, Mr. D'Amato was on last month in August. Now, this show, as we know, is pretty loaded because for the first time in a while, the roster was only split in half, unless guys had the night off or maybe something happened. So there was only 2 shows on this night, and the other pretty close to you, Kel, the other show tonight, the River Park Coliseum in Spokane, Washington. So way out in my boons near Mr. Nelson. Here was the card, at least a portion of the card. Coco Beware took on Danny Davis. We don't have results, just the matches. Junkyard Dog versus Nikolai Volkoff. The Killer Bees versus Demolition. Brutus Beefcake versus Rick Rude. And there was a 16-man battle royal, which included Billy Jack Haynes and Billy Jerk Haynes, and a gentleman who we'll probably talk about down the line when he debuts with us, JR, our good friend from the fine suburb known as Asbury Park. We'll get to him down the line. And a 6-man midget tag match. Fuck that shit. All right. And that's all we got. So that's the only other building we had. Sellout tonight, almost 18,000. Over 18,000, I believe, here at the Garden tonight. So big crowd, big house tonight. I don't think Felt Forum was open. I think it's just the Garden. So before we do that, start, JR, any other notes?
Yeah, we do. Thanks for our buddy Jason Greenhouse, of course. Here's what's gone on since our last show in August. 9-5 Superstars, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Slick and Nikolai Volkoff, with Slick introducing Bam Bam Bigelow. To believe he had won the battle for Bam Bam, like you mentioned, from Asbury Park, New Jersey. Moments later, Sir Oliver Humperdinck appeared instead and introduced Bigelow. Bigelow came out, said Slick would never be his manager, punched out Volkoff, and announced Humperdinck as his new manager. Ken Patera was shown wearing an arm cast after allegedly being injured by the Heenan family. Of course, in reality, he had been injured a few weeks earlier, prior on Superstars. And the Honky Tonk Man was interviewed, where he mentioned how Randy Savage was upset over the comments Honky had been making about being the greatest intercontinental champion of all time. Honky saying he could sing, dance, or wrestle much better than Savage. And on 9/12, we saw footage of Randy Savage threatening Jimmy Hart in the locker room, telling Hart to tell the Honky Tonk Man to stop talking about him after everything he's saying about being the greatest of all time. And Rick Rude defeated Jerry Monty prior to the bout. Heenan introduced Andre the Giant, who made his way to ringside. That was Andre's official TV return for the first time since WrestleMania 3. So there you go on the news of the month.
Yes. Well, there was that taped interview. There was that taped interview on Saturday Night's Main Event.
Right, but this is his first, like...
Like live in a crowd,
live in
right.
the arena, yeah.
Right, okay. All right, why don't we dive in? Our opener, JR. Yeah, I got nothing on this one. Might as well just walk right into it.
Yeah. Of course, we are back to the Garden to kick off
yes.
the fall here. Gorilla Monsoon
and
Lord,
yes,
Alfred Hayes
yep.
in the booth. And we do open up with old friend Scott Casey taking on Steve Lombardi. Big Steve back for the first time in a while working another opener. Lombardi begs off a bit to start as Bobby Heenan joins the booth to brag about his looks. Casey works a headlock as Al makes fun of Bobby's jacket. Casey gets a hip lock and continues to control and frustrate Lombardi, eventually going to the arm. Lombardi works free, is able to shove Casey to the floor. And Gorilla says Lombardi's come a long way since being coming under the tutelage of Pat Patterson and Terry Garvin. Al says Pat's been a big influence on his lifestyle, and Bobby says he's graduated the Garvin School of Self-Defense. So that is just a barrage of insider gay jokes at the expense of Steve Lombardi, invoking the names of course, Pat Patterson, Terry Garvin, the Garvin School of Defense, a long-running kind of wink-wink joke, and then Al just flat-out basically says, like, yeah, Lombardi's gay because Pat influences his lifestyle. So, I mean, they're not pulling many punches on this one. Casey tries to pull himself back in, but Lombardi kicks him hard back to the floor. Casey regroups, but Lombardi grabs him on the way in and chokes him before snapping his neck on the top rope. Gorilla talks about Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart hanging at the Hard Rock today before putting over a brand new wrestling album. We'll talk about that later. Back inside, Lombardi punches Casey and works a chin lock. Casey powers free, but Lombardi mows him down with a clothesline, and Al says Casey's experience edge doesn't seem to be helping him here tonight. Lombardi goes for covers and stomps away as Bobby tries to explain why none of his family members had a track on that album. Lombardi goes to a chancery, but Casey powers up and breaks it with an airplane spin. The two trade boots until Lombardi goes to the eyes as Gorilla says Bobby lost out when he picked up Rick Rude, but lost Paul Arndorf, who has now left the Heenan family. Bobby says it's a great move, but Gorilla just laughs at that. Casey goes to an abdominal stretch, but Lombardi works free. Casey follows with a sleeper. Lombardi turns into one of his own as Bobby and Al put over Steve's improvement in the ring. Casey powers up and drives Lombardi to the corner, but comes up empty on a charge and slams into the post. Al says Casey's been slow and wonders if he has a concussion from that fall to the floor earlier. Lombardi gets two from a backbreaker, heads up top, but Casey meets him and slams him down. Casey fires up the crowd, hammers away, and it's a nice delayed pile driver for two, but he stood around before covering, so that delayed him. Casey lands a leaping knee to the face and hits a bulldog for the win. A solid little opening match. Lombardi looked pretty solid. I thought he looked good in there. More aggressive and smooth than he looked in the past. Casey didn't look as strong this month, but he fought through it and nabbed the win. That's a pretty basic opening brawl, but it kept the crowd hooked. I actually went a star and a half on this. I thought it was one of the better openers we've seen when it features guys of this ilk. What do you think, Scott?
I was not as much in love with it as you were. I gave it a star.
All right. I mean, I'm not in love with it. It was a star and a half. No, I didn't give it four stars.
No, I know. Your match time. Well, let me ask you this, JR. With those two guys, I don't know if you have Graham in front of you, but how long do you think it was?
Yeah, I don't know, like 10-ish.
What do you think, Kel?
8, 9 minutes.
11:32.
Yeah.
Hey. So it was a little long for my liking, but. Bobby was at ringside, which, of course, added a lot. We'll see a lot of Bobby tonight. Gorilla's jokes, like, breaking Bobby's balls is sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not. Like, he was making fun of his jacket. What'd you got, the five and dime? Like, sometimes I feel like Bobby, like, Gorilla has to give Bobby shit just because that's the gag.
Right. Even when it, well, actually, I thought Al was riding him more with the jacket. The falling star on the back, whatever the fuck
he was
saying.
And the Terry Garvin stuff was ridiculous. Yeah. And usually, Bobby doesn't do the Terry Garvin jokes. That's a big Gene thing. Because Gene used to do it all the time on fucking TNT. All the time he did the Terry Garvin jokes and Provincetown and all that other stuff. So that was very common for Gene. But Bobby usually never did that. But I think he was having a good time at the, you know, because it was an MSG show. I mean, it wasn't awful. I mean, it was all right. I don't think Scott Casey's a bad worker. He was a little.
I think he's just
a little
old.
Blown up. Yeah, and he was a little blown up in this one. I feel like he lost. I mean, trust me, won't be the only guy tonight that runs out of gas. Wait till we get to the next match. I mean, it was fine. I like the pile driver. I think that's a great – because you know what it is? We're conditioned as fans to not see guys like him get cool moves like that. Like, they usually get, you know, some clotheslines and, you know, a couple of atomic drops and shit. But a guy like Scott Casey doesn't get something cool like a pile driver. We talked about it with D'Amato last month when he wrestled Tama. That you don't get, you know, like guys like him don't get cool moves like pile drivers, you know? So it's cool to see it, and he let it go. And then, of course, they all complained when he didn't, you know, do the the finish too quick, you know, the pin quick enough. They did seem gassed at the end. I mean, it didn't suck, but I mean, I gave it a star. There's going to be a lot of cases tonight. I know we've talked about it a lot lately, JR, about how we don't do quarters. There were a lot of matches tonight that I could have used either an extra quarter or went back a quarter. I might have given this a star and a quarter, but I couldn't give it a star and a half. So I gave it a star, Kel. not offensive. I mean, it was okay. And I like watching Scott Casey, but he was a little more gassed tonight than he was last month.
Yeah, I mean, I think a star is way too generous even for this. Scott Casey was just the drizzling shits in this match, I thought. Just gassed, totally gassed, so slow. Everything he did, to the point that Hayes had to actually mention that he's just so slow. I didn't like this one. Lombardi, he was fine, and he's, you know, he was...
I thought it was the best Lombardi match so far.
Yeah, I mean, he was in a no-win situation here. Casey's just a total slug. The fans, according to the fans, this is basically a battle of the heels, because Casey got almost as many boos as Lombardi when they introduced them. Boring chants from within the first 30 seconds of the match, and garbage was being thrown in the ring, which was kind of a theme this evening, as we'll see. The commentary was fun because Heenan was there, and the gay jokes and all that, and it kept me entertained in that regard. But I thought this match was horrible. I gave it a dud.
Guys are rough. The Casey thing. No, I mean. Like, I picked up on the fact that he looked awful, but I actually thought it fed into the story that he had, this was having an off night and was hurting and scuffled through and still got the win. Like, I don't know. I guess I just kind of went along with that part of it.
I don't think it was kayfabe. I think it was shoot. He was
well, yeah, but off. If you go along with the, you know.
Right, yeah.
Anyway.
All
right. Okay.
There we go. Next up, speaking of gassed, there's a lot of it here.
There is a lot, and that is a kind of, explosion between former friends, I guess, and partners, and that is the newly turned face, Don Morocco, taking on the ace cowboy, Bob Orton. They had split, they had their issues, and came to blows. I think we talk about it, I think, in the notes maybe last month, where they end up fighting on TV or whatever. Do you remember, Kelly, what the exact scenario
was? Yeah, it was on one of the superstars, I think.
Yeah, so... that went down, and Morocco here is called Magnificent still, but also The Rock, which is his new nickname. So he gets called both here, so he hasn't shed the Magnificent label just yet. Gets a real nice pop from the crowd, though. Al says Morocco looks like a rock for sure, which he certainly fucking did. Orton attacks with the bell and hammers and chokes away at his old friend. Orton drops him with a perfect shoulder breaker and then grinds the shoulder against the post. Gorilla wonders where Mr. Fuji is and assumes that Orton got custody of him in the divorce. Orton paintbrushes Morocco across the back of the head and slugs away before going to the shoulder. Orton clamps on a short-arm scissors. Gorilla rips the ref, and Al discusses Ace's game plan. Morocco finally powers up and just murders Orton with strikes and a big clothesline that knocked Ace to the floor. When he returns, Morocco takes off his shirt and uses it to whip Orton across the ring. Morocco starts to work the leg, wrapping it around the post. Morocco batters the leg, twisting into a spinning toe hold and slamming down hard on a couple times. Orton goes to the eyes to regain control, and it's a nice delayed vertical. Orton then follows with going to the middle ropes and trying to splash. Morocco gets his knees up to block it. The Rock focuses on the ribs, landing a gut buster for two and then trying to bury a knee to the chest for another two count. Orton knocks Morocco to the floor and then follows out, but Don ends up shoving the ace into the post. Orton grabs a chair and slings it into the back of Morocco's gorilla, calls for a DQ. Orton heads in and goes up top and pulls Morocco off the top rope. To the top rope, where Ace tries for superplex, but Morocco blocks it, slugs Orton down, but then Orton gets crotched on the top rope. Orton recovers and comes back with a power slam for two, but Morocco blocks a pile driver with a backdrop for two. Orton bridges up and tries for another pile driver, but Morocco counters another backdrop, and this time goes into a pinning combination for the win. That second pile driver attempt was real scary. That was did not look good. I thought it was really well worked and fun. I thought Orton shined when he was on top. I thought Morocco transitioned actually fairly well here because he has some pretty good selling and some nice comeback power offense. I thought it was shrewd. I thought it was needed to salvage Morocco that turn, and Orton was great as always. Maybe I'm flying high on the show on the Terry Garvin stuff, but I went 2.5 on this match, Kelly. Tell me if I'm crazy or not.
You're a little crazy. Okay. I went 1.5. I mean, the setting was right. The crowd was into it. They're totally into Morocco now as a babyface because he was a guy that when he was a heel, the fans, a lot of them loved him. So now that he's a babyface, you know, he's really popular. Orton still was really good at this time and carried this match, bumped like crazy. But Morocco was, oof. Oh, man, he's so big now. He's just so juiced. The t-shirt thing was hilarious because I thought like because he kept it on for so long at the beginning, I thought he legit couldn't get it off him because it was so tight. I thought they'd have to cut the shirt off him at
God,
the end
so
of the
juiced,
match.
So juiced.
God, he's so juiced. And then he's blown up so quickly. He's just pouring sweat like a shower onto Orton at one point when he's standing over him. I thought, oh man, he's gonna, you know, heart attack or something. He just looked horrible. But yeah, like I said, Orton was bumping great. So, and the crowd was into it, definitely good heat. And at one point, Morocco sent flying to the outside and into the chairs. And I forgot to mention this during the Texas Death Match with Hogan and Race the other month, where Finkel made the announcement: anybody sitting at ringside has to leave, or they should leave, or you know, stay at their own risk or whatever. And I finally realized that they actually sell those seats, I guess.
Oh, really?
I guess so, because it's always just random people sitting there. I think those seats were actually for sale.
Oh, okay.
Which is crazy that you could actually buy a seat inside the railing or the guardrail. But I think so, because they just look... Sometimes it looks like, you know, they're, you know... Especially back in the old days, the Vince Sr. years, it looked like a bunch of cronies smoking cigars, sitting at ringside and stuff. But in the 80s, it looks like, you know... yuppie type fans, people that had more money, I guess, got to sit there. But yeah, the finish was pretty cheap too. Orton's shoulders were nowhere near close to being down on that pin. But I guess maybe that was also kind of to protect him. Good heat, but the work wasn't that great, especially from Morocco.
Your match time is 11:42. I know, JR, that you were dining on danger and whatever, snacking on danger, dining on whatever today, but I don't know what the fuck you're smoking.
I'm never the high man on any of this shit.
No, you're not. No, exactly. And look, no one's a bigger Morocco fan than me, and I know Parv and I always goof at each other about it, but he was a fucking goddamn disaster. I mean, he's like, I don't know what the fuck happened, but I don't know what's been going on this summer. He's been wrestling Orton since, like, frickin' May. But he is, like, misshapen. I don't know what the hell the problem. He can't even get his shirt off. He can't even lift his arms up. I mean, it was ugly. It was really ugly. Now,
he probably just got a pump in the back, and he was a little sore.
He couldn't even put his arms behind his head. He's going to rip his fucking tricep muscles. Well, at least we know who's winning. I guess we have one award in the bag before we go to the break.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Easy.
I think I already wrote that. I think if JR, you know, I think I already wrote it down. I don't know who was sitting – who was – oh, my God. Braun Strowman is flipping a truck over tonight. I don't know what the deal is with the bell tonight, if there's, like, a kid on a field trip or something. But there are multiple, like, random bell ringings tonight.
Well, they say it, actually, at one point. I don't remember if it was this show. I think it's this show. Gorilla mentions it, that it's attached to the ring. So if you hit the corner right or something, it rings. That's why it always happens on the shows. Yeah, one of them actually mentioned it on the show.
Yeah, because it happens later in the show too. But I mean, he's sweating like crazy. I don't know if the Diana ball is floating around the air, but I mean, he's a sweaty mess. And I think my problem with the match, and Orton was great. I mean, Orton's Orton. Similar problem that I had with this match is what you've talked about, JR, with like Ricky Steamboat matches. Obviously, we saw on TV that this was kind of a pseudo-blood feud. These guys were tag partners, and, you know, Orton fucked him over, and then they brawled into the crowd. But I didn't get that feeling this was a blood feud match until maybe the last, like, couple of minutes. So I feel like this match needed to have a little more sizzle to it because of, the history, and I didn't feel it.
No?
I felt like it was a
simple
thing.
I thought the crowd heat carried it completely in that regard. I thought they were super into it.
A little bit, and I think it did pick up maybe in the last, like, 3 minutes, but I thought early on it was very paint-by-numbers and kind of like just two guys wrestling. I didn't feel the pain, no pun intended, until the last, like, 2 or 3 minutes. And I feel like Orton got forced to slow the match down because Orton, you know, fucking Morocco is going, like, half a speed.
No, so I don't know. I didn't pick up on that at all. I thought Morocco selling was actually pretty good. I mean, yes, but because he was completely fucking blown up. But I thought he was actually selling all right. And, like, I don't know. I was impressed with Orton. I was impressed with the crowd. I liked the finish, too. I just thought Morocco, even though he's had other stuff blown into him, I think he's had some, you know, fresh air blown into him as well as a face in this one. I got into it, I guess. I don't know. Just they hooked me. I have that emotional connection that they hooked me into.
I mean, I'm pumped that Morocco's a face. I'm curious creatively where we go from here. But this match was just, I mean, he was just, it was gross. I mean, the sweat was just ridiculous. Hit the treadmill. I mean, I understand firing yourself up with Dr. Zahorian, but Jesus Christ, go on the elliptical or whatever for a few minutes. Orton did do a great job. We did have some good individual moments. I thought that one. Almost superplex that turned into a powerbomb was a little ugly. Mm-hmm. I was expecting more.
The second powerbomb was the scariest spot of the whole match.
Yeah.
The second pile driver. I mean, it looked like he was just going to destroy his neck before Morocco fought off. And I thought he was going to do it, and it was going to go real bad. But
there was some sloppiness there. It got a little scary. They did pick it up. Like I said, in the last 2.5 minutes, I feel like they picked it up. But it just, if Morocco's going to be a big baby face, he needs to, you know, balance between being fucking juiced up to the gills and actually moving like a human being. So, I mean, but I do like the face turn, because I like Morocco, so I'd like to see him, seeing him as a baby face be pretty cool, but he needs to do a lot better than what he did here. I feel like somewhat of an injustice to Orton. But I mean, again, it could have been worse. I don't know how much worse, but it could have been worse. And your match time, 11:42. Now, we go from that to this, which is a complete 180 of any juicing whatsoever, and the culmination of a feud that's been boiling for the last 3 months here at the mm-hmm. Garden, and it to a certain extent culminates here, JR.
No, I don't think it culminates.
To a certain extent.
Right? Yeah, it keeps going.
Well, the next big chapter, chapter here.
Yes, and that is the Strike Force that likes to strike with force. That is Rick Martel and Tito Santana. Taking on the Islanders, of course, Kelly. You know this feud quite well, so I'm sure we'll get some insight from you. You and Marty covered this quite in depth on Tag Team's Back Again, so we'll talk to you in a moment about it. But here we go. Huge tag match rolls on. Martel's finally even up the sides, throwing a new team who wants revenge. The arrogant Islanders are out first, and Bobby Heenan joins them at ringside. Strikeforce comes charging out to girls in cars and maul the Islanders before the bell even rings, peppering them and clearing the ring. Martel goes to work on Tama, shooting him all over the ring and eventually knocking him right back outside. Tama returns and they lock up, but Martel ducks a right and works the arm before tagging Tito. Tito levels Haku on the apron, and now he works the arm, and Tama headbutts free but tags Haku. But Tito catches him and works his arm, and then tags Martel, who continues to focus on the limb. Gorilla says Tito's dropped 10 to 12 pounds and is cat-like in the ring. Martel gets a near fall off a crossbody and tags Tito, and they land a double-team clothesline. Tito keeps up the attack, grabbing some near falls along the way. Haku tries to find an opening, but Tito's all over him, tearing away at the arm. The ref gets tied up with Martel, allowing a blind tag and for Tama to take over and stomp away at the abdomen. Haku tags in, focuses in on the traps, and then moves into the front face lock. Tito escapes and makes the tag, but the ref was tied up and missed it and forced Martel to the apron. Tama comes in off the top of the big stomp for two and then goes to the traps. Haku returns and lays in headbutts and chops before cracking him with a thrust kick for two. Haku whiffs on a somersault splash, and Tito slowly crawls over for a hot tag to a huge pop. Martel comes in red hot, unloads on Tama, grabs a near fall on cross body, and then things break down with all four men brawling, and Martel ends up rolling Tama up, but the ref is tied up with Tito. Haku comes in and levels Martel in the head, and then stays in the ring, and him and Tama work together to punish Martel with strikes. Martel gets a window and tries for a crossbody off the middle rope, but Tama dodges it. Tama then goes up and comes up empty on a splash. The ref misses another strike force tag, and Haku drops a big headbutt on Martel, allowing Tama to cover for the win. Non-stop tag match, great action, tons of heat, fantastic chemistry. Al says the Islanders will be the number two team in the world right now with that win. Great showing for Strike Force as they get going as a team, and the Islanders continue to kill at his heels. Good win for the Islanders, too. Keep this feud raging. It's been fantastic. I went a dud on this one, though. I'm like, I went 3.5 stars on this one, Scott. What did you have?
Yeah, this was no Morocco, who looks like all four of them squished together.
Yeah, Martel wishes he could bump like Steve Lombardi.
Martel wishes he could sculpt his chest hair like Steve. Well, he has no chest hair, so. Anyway, your match time, 13. Yes. Your match time, 13:58. I mean, this was great. This was fantastic. I mean, it's a culmination of what we had the last 2 months with Martel facing both Islanders while mm-hmm. we were kind of waiting for Tito, or figuring out what they were going to do with Martel and what to do. And this was the best thing to do, is to put him with veteran experience Tito. I mean, this obviously was number one contenders match, and that's why I think the Islanders won, because I think they wanted to kind of give an aura of, just because, we have all these bad guys doesn't mean we can't have two great teams wrestle for the world title. So I didn't have a problem with Strikeforce losing here.
No, and it's their first – I mean, it's their first go-around as a team.
Right.
So it's understandable if they're a little shaky together and they have trouble, that the Islanders cheat out a win. They're more – they've been working together for well over a year now. They're craftier. So, no, I thought it made sense that Strikeforce is maybe just a bit behind as a unit.
Yeah. And, again, I think they wanted to – I think, creative one of the bookers wanted to have that aura of, just because the – these two teams are bad guys doesn't mean they can't wrestle for the world titles. We've seen it on past house shows, two heel teams wrestling each other. We've seen baby faces wrestle each other. So – and not the end of the world, So, I don't think this is a big problem at all, and a big win for the Islanders. I like the finish where, Haku and Tama don't look that much alike, so I don't know what the ref was thinking. I mean, their tights were sort of close, but
no, but they didn't. Anyway. he didn't see it. Like the right guy covered, didn't it? Haku hit the move, and Tama covered. Tama was legal.
No, Haku hit the move. Threw Tama out of the ring and Haku got
and he wasn't the legal man.
Oh, I thought
and
he wasn't the
legal
man.
Okay,
no.
Yeah, no, he chucked Tama out of the ring because Tama was out of it. And
well, you see the tights, you see the hair.
Yeah, no, I know. They weren't exact, but these refs fucking suck anyways. as Gorilla likes to mention to us every week, but overall tremendous match. I think I matched you, JR. I did. I gave this 3.5 as well. I would like to have given it 3.75. It wasn't 4 stars, but it was. I could have gone another quarter star if we went that way. But Kelly, I think you're really seeing, and I've said it with you and with Pete and with Johnny, we've said it. The tag division in the company is just little by little. It's going slowly because they are trying to flesh out teams that have no juice left and trying to create some new ones. But you're slowly seeing the tag division kind of come into shape, and these two teams are kind of on the forefront with the Hearts.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's cooking pretty good right now, the tag scene, and only gets better in the next year. I love this match. This was one of my favorites from back in the old days of tag teams, back again with Marty. I think if I was giving stars that first go around, I probably would have gave it 4 stars then, because it was fresh, and I really loved it. This time, I saw a few flaws in it, and I went the same as you guys. I went 3.5 stars. It's still really good, though. This was so well built up in the previous months with Martel going against the Islanders and being alone basically until Tito finally joined them. So the crowd's super into this. I love Strikeforce storming to the ring. They're still high-fiving the fans, but they also have this urgency in them that they want to get to the ring and get to the Islanders because they're just so pissed off. Girls in Cars is blaring in the background. That's cool because we got the YouTube version here, so no music edits, thank God. I'm sick of those after watching a few Mid-Atlantic episodes on the network lately. Holy crap, the dubs on those are awful. Anyway, this is like a classic tag match. Tito's great as the face in peril in this. And there was a long shine by Strikeforce to begin with. Martel got to show off his offense. Just great. Tom is a great heel. We've all remarked about that in the last few months. He just really came into his own with this role. The hot tag to Martel is met to a huge pop and a great Martel, classic Martel House of Fire. And the ending was a major screw job, but that's understandable. You got to keep this feud going. You can't have Strikeforce win right out of the bat, right out of the chutes or whatever. And that's a good point by JR saying that they're new. So they're not a polished unit yet, and they're gonna have these missteps early on. And it was a total screw job. It was a little too much of a screw job as far as making the ref look stupid, because he was so strict to the to Strikeforce making the legal tags, and then he totally just lets the whole thing with the Islanders go right. that he didn't see. And it was the esteemed Dick Kroll, too, as the referee. One of the, probably at this point, the longest serving referee in the company.
I didn't even know he was still with the company at this time, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you. He's gone by then.
Yeah, he must be almost done. Like, he's definitely gone, done by the 90s or beginning of the 90s. Yeah, but so much high energy in this match. And the crowd is molten. Yeah. And it's this feud is great. And yeah, we, Marty and I chronicled this in two parts because there was just so many layers to it. Because it starts as a Can-Am Connection Islanders feud, then Zink leaves and Martel has to go alone for a couple months. And then you have a second feud, basically, or a second chapter or whatever, second half. And this is actually just the first part in it, because then it'll go on for the rest of 1987. I went 3.5. Yeah, great match. Everyone should watch this one.
Whole feud has been great. You should go back, listen to the Tag Teams Back Again episode with Strikeforce Islanders feud. Two parts, right?
Yeah, two-parter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
It's a wispy time back in that.
All right. Speaking of wispy, this match is very wispy.
It is. And that is, the return of Brad Ringens taking on Tiger Chung Lee. Big Brad makes his return here. We haven't seen.
I love how you tried to make him sound tough there. Good try.
What, Big Brad?
Ringens. Savage saying it.
It's like fucking Riggins from Friday Night Lights, so, you know.
Yes, I love Riggins.
Texas forever. Haven't seen him since January, battles our old friend Tiger Chung. Gorilla puts over Brad's amateur credentials as Tiger starts off on the arm, but Brad quickly twists into control. They continue to trade some basic offense as Gorilla discusses Brad's wrist injury that will need surgery. Brad works the arm as Al tells us some stories about trading war stories with an old Vikings player recently. Tiger breaks the hold and clubs away and then buries the knee to the gut. Tiger continues to meander through some offense and some strikes, and then dodges a Brad elbow in order to come back. The crowd is not feeling this one at all. Brad reverses a whip and shoots Tiger hard to the corner. Brad punches away and lands a backdrop and follows a gut wrench for two. Tiger comes back with a sit-out clothesline and then a shoulder breaker for the win. The crowd did not like that one in a real weird match. Brad is cooked if Tiger's beating him, and I don't know if they just brought Brad in for like this one match just to chop him out. I don't know if it was a botch, if Brad was legit injured, but something weird, you know, it felt weird, that finish. The match shocked. It never really got going. Just a series of strikes to complete crickets. Tiger grabbed Brad's dick during the cover, by the way, for some reason, too.
Yeah.
It's very clear on the replay. A lot of Terry Garvin references. Dumb match altogether. I didn't get any of this. I went dud, Kelly. Very confusing.
Yeah, I went dud, too. I probably gave it a dud before the bell even rang. Because when I saw the names come up, it was a... the first match, too, with Casey and Lombardi actually was a sigh match, too. When you see the names come up, you're like, oh,
maybe you. Actually
you have to watch these things. This one was thankfully quite short, maybe 5 minutes. It wasn't long. I love Chunger, but he was totally just in phone it in mode at this point. I mean, he's wearing boots now. So that's kind of like a sign, I think, of guys that don't care anymore. Like previous barefoot wrestlers are like, well, I may as well at least be comfortable now. Right. I was sick of wrestling barefoot and, you know, it just wasn't good. Like Jimmy Snuka did that at the end of his run in the 90s. He started wearing boots because he just didn't give a fuck.
Yes. That's
right.
Hedge-rinkers.
Yeah. The sign of them just phoning it in and like just wanting to be comfortable in their last few years in the company. This was awful. Chunger just looked really bad at times, but he just didn't care. Ringens, wow. He was in the company a year or so before this, or when was it? I was surprised he turned up at this point.
Who, Ringens?
No,
he was in January. He was on the January MSG.
Okay, yeah. So it was, quite a few months before this. I don't know if he had been in the WWF that whole time. I don't think so. I don't know. He's pretty much done. Or no, actually.
He fought Frenchie Martin, didn't he, in that one?
Oh, man. He does go back to the AWA, actually, later on. It has a tag run, title run with Ken Patera.
They should have done that here. Could have been red hot.
Yeah, there you go. That
I know.
Wow. Yeah, it looks like he was there. I mean, he's there in January, February. March. Wow. Yeah, he's pretty steady. May. Looks like he's off in April. June.
He was never on TV, though. He was never on Superstars.
No, he just worked the circuit a lot with Tiger Chung Lee, Gibbs, Jose Estrada, Sika,
yeah.
Frenchie again in August, Frenchie, SD Jones, yeah. Red Demon, Sharp. God. I mean, he never elevated at all. Like, he's just working openers across the country. He was actually on primetime on October 8th. I think it's this match. Yeah, this match was on primetime.
yeah, because as a kid, I had no idea he was even with the WWF. It wasn't until years later that I knew that he was there because I got to see matches.
His last match was actually a few days after this. He beats Tiger in Winnipeg, and then St. Paul is his last match, September 25th.
Yeah. I think this was the planned finish. I just think Reigns was getting jobbed out. He did the typical kick out at three, you know, like an asshole, for guys that think they should still win matches. You know, they do that. I hate that. But it was just, it was a match between two guys that just couldn't care less at this point, or especially Chunger. I don't think Chunger had too much time left in New York either.
I think it's his last match.
Is it?
Well, he has the two with Riggins.
Okay, but last televised match or whatever.
Yeah, well, his last match was October 10th. He loses to fucking David Sammartino. He wrestles him a couple of times. His last TV match is against Duggan, October 24th, Superstars. That's his last TV match.
Wow. Well, farewell, Tiger Chung Lee. We'll miss you. Mm.
Your runtime is a thankful 501. Brad Riggins is one of those typical arrogant Vern alums who think their, you know, shit doesn't stink.
I'm trying to remember if his match was any good. I got him mixed up. Was it Nick Kaniski we actually liked? Was it one of the two guys we liked their match? Was it Kaniski?
Nick Kaniski. Yeah.
He had a decent match.
Nick was the younger brother, because Kelly Kaniski was in Mid-South earlier in the decade. As a heel, actually, which is kind of odd. But, Brad Rangins is the guy, you know, Vern used to blow him on the weekly shows, you know, Mr. Olympian and all that fucking useless shit.
Yeah,
and now he's here, and Vince is like, I don't fucking care. You're a boring glass of water. So pretty much the end of that here. I was thinking that, like, this was like Tiger Chung's, like, farewell, you know, kind of like the Duke, you know. Let's give him a farewell win. And here you go. Yeah, I was confused too, which made me think that either Rangins was on the shit list or nobody fucking cared anymore.
Well, it's clear now. I mean, if you look, they probably knew he was leaving, so they probably just had him wrapping up. Now, that would make me question why they didn't just have someone else go over him. You know, like, that could actually maybe use the win instead of just, why bother dragging him out here just to lose to fucking Tiger Chung Lee on his way out the door? Why do you have him put over someone useful, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, The bell. This is where they mention the bell, because it happened in this match too, and this is when they actually mention that the bell is connected to the ring, which is odd though, because it never happened before. I don't remember hearing that often.
Oh yeah, no, it definitely happens. I feel like it happens once a fucking show, that bell.
It used to be on a chair by the ring, and it would get jostled.
I never really caught it until today, and maybe because it was louder than normal. I don't know. Anyway, I mean, this match is crap, and I think I gave it a dud too. Let's see. Yeah, I gave it a dud too.
It was fucking atrocious.
Yeah, it's
there was zero
terrible.
Redeeming moments in this match. Like nothing. Not even a spot.
No.
You know? It's nothing will look good.
No, it was just slow moving.
It's rare on these shows. I mean, we've had bad matches, but there's usually I feel like one little moment you can say, okay, well that was okay. Like this to me had like nothing. Like there was nothing redeeming at all in this match.
No, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. What was not terrible is our next match. First visit from our World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion for the first time since June. I think, June.
The Harley
I think
rematch.
It was last time we saw him.
Yeah.
He only comes
the
with
rematch
Kelly's
with Harley
around.
In June. Yeah. So
he knows when Kelly's here, and that's when he shows up. That's it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I only come for the Hogan shows.
Hogan only comes for the Kelly shows.
And who was our champion facing, JR?
Was the One Man Gang. Making his MSG his first appearance here, born George Gray, February 12th, 1960, Spartanburg, South Carolina. Trained local indie wrestler and promoter Chief Jay Eagle and Darren Rattlesnake Westbrook. Started his career at the age of 17 in the Carolinas as Crusher Gray. Moved on to the Kentucky, Tennessee area, working for ICW under the name Crusher Broomfield. Gray went on as a part of a package along with Brad Bragg, Westbrooks, and Rick Starr. One of Broomfield's major angles was as contract was owned by ICW champion Randy Savage, and his nemesis Ron Garvin defeated Savage in a match to set Broomfield free. Worked for the NWA affiliates such as Mid-South and WCW as a one-man gang, billed as being from Chicago's Halsted Street in the South Side, managed by Kevin Sullivan, Theodore Long, Gentleman Jim Holiday, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck in various territories. Was part of Scandal Akbar's Devastation Inc., as well as working with Gary Hart while in World Class. Protege of Akbar's in Mid-South, where Gray got the name that would stick with him for the rest of his career, making his debut in the territory, interfering in matches and assaulting fan favorites. Mid-South announcer Bill Watts would say he's a one-man gang. The gang worked on and off in Mid-South, Florida, Japan, Texas, returned to the Carolinas with Crockett, billed as the one-man gang, George Gray, initially. Worked in Texas All-Star, feuded with Big Bubba. His last tour of Mid-South promotion renamed himself to the UWF. Gang was one of the top villains, feuding with top favorite Jim Duggan. Late 86, Gang won the UWF heavyweight title at an angle where champion Terry Gordy was injured earlier in the evening. Gang was scheduled to face Gordy later on the card, won the belt by forfeit. Held it for 6 months. In May of 87, began receiving inquiries for the UWF. Promptly took advantage of that, agreed to terms, returned to the UWF to drop the title to Big Bubba, and then made his debut on May 12th, 87, managed by Slick in a match with Jesse Cortez. Before we get to the match, anything you guys want to talk about Gang from his days pre-WWF?
When I watched all the Mid-Souths in 82 and 83, or in mostly 82 on the network, yeah, he was this big, long-haired guy. Kind of the same as Bundy was in World Class. Bundy was Gary Hart and H&H's group, whereas Gang was the big guy in Devastation. I don't think they called it – I don't think Skandor Akbar called it Devastation Incorporated in Mid-South, but that was his big dude. And he was actually a pretty good worker. He moved pretty well in Mid-South, even at his size. A little bigger now than he was then, but I don't know, Kel. I liked him in Mid-South. I thought he was a good hand and moved pretty well for a big guy.
Yeah, I've caught bits and pieces of him in Mid-South, but mostly like my memories are when I was a kid reading the mags, and they covered the UWF pretty heavily. And I thought he was cool. Like, the look was cool, the mohawk and all that, the sort of biker look to him. At the time, I thought it was a real cool look. And when he came to the WWF, I was one of the few kids who had been reading the magazine. So I was telling all my friends, oh yeah, this guy's really awesome. Cause I knew about him. And, I was actually kind of disappointed later when he went to the Akeem gimmick, because I thought they ruined him, at the time as a kid. But now I go back and look at that, and he had, you know, he embraced that so well and had a ton of fun with it. But no, he was a really good worker. I've always liked the one man gang, character, and it's cool to see him now here against Hogan.
All right, and that match is up next. Big title match, Hogan returning to the Garden against a brand new challenger. Gang has an awesome presence as he marches to the ring with Slick, and the crowd is raining boos all over him. Hogan follows to a huge pop, back in business. We get some feeling out early, getting the crowd nice and lubed up before the two lock up. Gang shoves Hulk to the corner, and then Hulk regroups and grabs a side headlock, but Gang shoves him off and plants him with a shoulder block. Hogan comes back with a leaping knee to the head for two, and then tries to slam, but Gang falls on him for a near fall. Hogan's writhing in pain as Al says he tried that way too early. Gang stomps away and clubs Hogan right to the floor. Gang follows out and hammers away as the crowd rallies the champ. Back inside, Hogan elbows Gang off and rams him to the buckles 10 times, and then lays on into him with right hands and chops. Hogan follows with clotheslines and then drags Slick in and hoists him up, but Gang makes a save from behind. Gang goes to a nerve hold when Hogan powers out and levels him with a big boot and then starts to work the lower back. Gang shot Hogan hard to the corner and grabbed a bear hug. Hulk goes to the eyes but gets too aggressive and runs into a hard clothesline. Gang follows with a 747 splash, but Hogan blows out at one and hulks up. Hogan peppers away with right hands and then shoots Gang from corner to corner before cracking him with a clothesline, and then finally slams him and drops the leg, but Slick gets on the apron to distract the champ. Gang clotheslines Hogan to the floor, and they brawl out there until they're both counted out. After the bell, Hogan dodges Gang's attack and backdrops him to the floor. Another red-hot brawl sprint for Hogan with a molten crowd. Gang looked great here, moving with ease and dropping heavy bombs on offense. Hogan blowing out of the 747 cover at one was probably a bit much, but overall it's a lot of fun and should lead to a good rematch. Strong showing for Gang and Hogan. I thought it was great, as always, for Hogan. A strong showing for Gang, I should say. Hogan was great, as always. I went 3 stars on this, Kel.
Yeah, I went 3 stars, too. I don't think I'd ever seen this match, and if I had, it'd been years and years ago. So yeah, really fun. Hot start by Hogan coming in, you know, knocks Gang down right away, and we're off to the races, basically. I loved the failed slam attempt for a near fall right at the beginning. That was a cool way to start things. Crowd was just nuclear hot throughout. And Gang, yeah, he'd been built up pretty well. I think they did an angle on TV where he hurt superstar Billy Graham, if I'm not mistaken. I know they did it. I can't remember if it was before this or after this. It may have been after, as a way to write off Graham when he got hurt again. But nevertheless, Gang was, you know, when he came into New York, he was put over as being this monster, unstoppable monster, and really he was destroying everybody left, right, and center. Yeah, great big pop when Hogan kicked out for the big splash, and the comeback was really hot too. Huge pop for the body slam, and then with the ending, the count out. That I couldn't go any higher than 3 with the kind of the total non-finish we got here. And you know, I talked about the last time I was on the show, like the end of an era for Hogan with that Harley Texas Death Match, because it was kind of the end of the Hogan that would be wrestling in a bit different style, right. More of a brawler, had the different colored trunks and all this. And I think now we're definitely seeing, you know, the beginning of Formula Hogan, mm-hmm. Especially with the post-match pose routine, which was really long and extended this time. I can't remember them really, or Hogan doing like such a long pose routine for the MSG shows previous to this one. So we're getting more of that. We had the leg drop and all that, the sort of the standard Hogan cliches and the Hulk up and everything. We're starting to see more of the cliches. But nevertheless, this was a really good match. I'm surprised, you know, I'll spoil things a bit, that they never went back to these guys.
Right. I assumed they would with the double count out. I mean, I was like, oh, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why didn't they?
I think maybe they just didn't want to beat Gang. Like, if they had a rematch, Hogan was going to have to win. So maybe they just figured Gang is so new and so hot. Like, this to me felt like they threw it together just to give Hogan a match and give him someone fresh. And they said, well, we got to protect Gang, but he can't win the title. And we'll just kind of have the double count out.
Maybe it's strange, because that in the old days, or not even the old days, but just prior to this, like a match that ended like this with the double count out, you'd bring back for a lumberjack match or even a cage match or something. And it's strange that this didn't get at least 2 at the Garden, because this was a sellout crowd too. This match, obviously, I mean, this was a stacked show, but still. I think this match probably was the main reason that the Garden was sold out tonight. So it's just odd that they didn't go back to this at the Garden. But anyway, yeah, really good match. Hogan still got it, and he still will for, you know, several years. But things are starting to slowly become a bit more standardized for the Hulkster.
That's actually one of my number one points too, Cal. Your match time, 9:09. I gave this 3 stars as well. I had a blast with this match.
And just really quick aside, they don't fight again for a little bit. October, they go around the horn with a few matches. It's not much. But yeah, nothing. One man game did beat Dick Flanagan. So we get a new nickname for Andy anyway. That was in November.
I still like Peter Enos.
They fight on and off here and there in October and November. Not a ton, but they do wrestle some pretty big arenas, like St. Louis, I saw in there, Pittsburgh. So they do hit some pretty big cities with them at different shows. But yeah, never again here. Baltimore.
What's funny about that is This is literally like his first match not against Killer Khan in eons, because as recently as the previous Thursday, which I believe was the Spectrum, he had fought Killer Khan again, and he was fighting Killer Khan all summer, Hogan. So this was literally brand new. I'm surprised we didn't see one Hogan-Killer Khan match at all here at the Garden.
Yeah. Do we ever see Killer Khan? I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know either. I thought maybe we saw him in November, but I'm not sure. We'll see him, obviously. I think we see him on Saturday's main event. Anyway, I want to talk about your point, Kel, because I said the same thing when I was watching it today. Usually, and I think I mentioned this with Pete, because that was the last time we had Hogan. No, you were on the last time, so I must have mentioned this. Hogan wrestles a different, at least up to this point, Hogan wrestles a different match, you know, in non-televised events or local televised events than he does, obviously, on pay-per-views and, you know, Saturday Night's main events. But this was the first time he did the Hogan match at a house show.
Yeah.
Usually we get the kind of the out-of-the-box brawl for him and the kind of the different way Hogan wrestles. It's not color by numbers. But for the first time, we got the color by numbers match tonight. Hogan was very basic, let Gang kind of chuck him around, kick out of the finisher, which I thought was a little bit much, and then had the wonky ending and then the pose down. So even though it was still a good match and it was still three stars, I was a little disappointed because I was expecting the house show Hogan, which is much more entertaining and much more kind of outside the box thinking creatively in the ring. And we didn't get that tonight. We got the, you know, the pay-per-view TV, you know, the national Hogan, not the local Hogan. And that was a little disappointing. Having said that, again, the match is really good. And I like Gang. Moved around pretty well for a fresh opponent.
And like Kelly said, the local Hogan may be gone. Like, that might be it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's disappointing.
Yeah,
it's a bummer. It sucks. Because, you know, local Hogan had that different kind of flavor to him. I'm fine not changing the tights. I mean, red and yellow is red and yellow. That's what he's based on. But I'm talking about just kind of more brawling and being more vicious and kind of wrestling. Not totally as, you know, babyface sugary as he normally does. But now I feel like he's settling into the Hogan match all over the place. And that's kind of a bummer. Now, sometimes that's really good. And he'll get good opponents that'll settle into that and make it a good match. And there's other times the matches will be terrible. So we'll document that as we move along. But I'd say something, Gang, it's probably Gang's biggest payday he probably ever got at this point in his career. I'm sure he got nothing close to this. And I think it's funny that we get a test. Like, this is in essence a test match almost. Because like I said, as most recently as that previous Thursday when they had a house show down at the Spectrum and he fought Killer Khan again, he was still fighting Killer Khan throughout the summer. Maple Leaf Gardens, Boston, and finally at the Spectrum. And then all of a sudden we come to the Big House and he's got a completely different opponent. So I think that's pretty funny. Again, the match isn't bad. I think I mentioned the runtime was 9:09. So it was, you know, decent size, decent length Hogan match. But I am kind of bummed, Kelly. You're absolutely right that we're not going to see, like, the outside-the-box Hogan in the ring that we usually get on the non-televised or local televised shows. And we're going to start getting the typical, you know, kind of the Saturday Night's main event Hogan. Like, the pay-per-view Hogan, it depends on how long the match is. It's not that much color by numbers, depending on how long it is. This is like the Saturday Night's main event standard TV formula match that you know he's going to win or ends in a schmoz. And it's the same kind of step-by-step match for him. And that's kind of a bummer because I kind of enjoy the outside-the-box Hogan on these local shows. So, but the match ends in a double countout, and Hogan retains his World Wrestling Federation heavyweight championship. All right, why don't we take a break? Not a bad show so far, JR. Not as good as last month, but not bad. It's okay.
Well, obviously, I'm feeling a little bit differently than you. Yeah, really. I've enjoyed this show. I think it's been pretty good, so we'll see if it continues.
What do you think, Kel? Not bad so far?
Yeah. Two really good, great matches so far. A couple duds for me, but that's par for the course for MSG shows. So, yeah, good enough so far.
Okay. Well, we'll take a break when we return. We will have four more matches, including the return of a guy we haven't seen since February here at Madison Square Garden. But first, let's take a break because...
With their tanks and their bombs, in your head, they are crying. promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Keith, the former net cop. You're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at the September 1987 Madison Square Garden House Show. And, of course, do want to remind everyone that we are just about under 2 weeks away from our Royal Rumble Philadelphia trek as a Place to Be Nation. Scott and I will both be there. So if you're going to be in Philadelphia for Royal Rumble weekend and want to hang out with us, let us know. I believe we'll be doing a gathering on Saturday afternoon-ish somewhere, and we'll determine where. If you haven't been in contact with us yet, please let me know, and we'll be sure to get you involved.
Yep, absolutely. Right before NXT TakeOver, so it'll probably be somewhere somewhat close to Wells Fargo, but we'll keep you in the loop on where we'll be.
Yeah, we should probably get on that and figure that out.
Yeah,
but yes, I can't believe how fast this comes. Feels like we're just
I can't believe it either. It's crazy, right?
Amazing. It's nuts, I say. Mm-hmm. And of course, it'll be a lot of fun that weekend. And judging by your history, Scott, and passing these trips, I think I'll be hearing a phrase from you to various members of the party, and that'll be, I just can't Stop Loving You. And that is, of
course, Rotella?
The song that's underneath us here tonight. That is Michael Jackson leading us into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you. Thank you, JR. Matt Rotella says it sober and drunk. But yes, behind in the background, the king of pop, Michael Jackson, with a song you might not totally remember, but here we are. I Just Can't Stop Loving You, Michael Jackson with Sada Garrett. I don't know. Maybe this was on Bad. I don't know. Or if this was just like a single. Not sure. But he's your number one song this week as the Billboard Top 100 that came out 2 days prior on that Saturday, the 19th of September. At number two, our girl Whitney Houston, Didn't We Almost Have It All? We never do. Number three, JR's favorite band, Los Lobos,
yes,
with La Bamba.
La Bamba. This song was the first single released from Bad. Yep.
Okay, so it wasn't Bad. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll get some even better songs then down the line. La Bamba at number three. Number four, little Here I Go, a song you and I know very well, JR. Here I Go Again by Whitesnake.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of references to that this evening. At number five, When Smokey Sings by ABC. Of course, ABC did that excellent, well-known early 80s hit, The Look of Love. This song is called When Smokey Sings. Number six, another favorite here, Police Be Nation, little Huey Lewis in the News with Doing It All for My Baby. Number seven, Can't We Try? Oh, this is a big-time yacht rock clip here. Can't We Try by Dan Hill with Vonda Shepard. You know, can't we try just a little more? Number eight, I Heard a Rumor by Bananarama, which is actually from the awesome Fat Boys movie Disorderlies. Tremendous movie. Number nine, Lost in Emotion by Lisa and Cult Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And number 10, Touch of Grey by the Grateful Dead. Probably their first top 10 hit since probably, I don't know, Truckin' or Casey Jones, one of those singles from the early 70s. So there's your Billboard Top 10 that came out 2 days before on the 19th. And your number one song was I Just Can't Stop Loving You, Michael Jackson with Sada Garrett, which was the first sing. Yes, of course. I can't stop booking wakes from Bad. Before we move on, a little extra music note here. On this date, Monday, September 21st, 1987, what was released in record stores, and it actually was mentioned, Gorilla mentioned
it in the
first match.
Next weekend, yep.
Yes, and that is Pile Driver, otherwise known as the Wrestling Album 2.
Feels like an argument.
here's your set list from that album. The song you heard earlier, Strike Force, Robbie Dupree, Girls in Cars. Right. Get out your windbreakers, baby. And D'Amato still haggles the Yacht Rock Channel's Twitter account on SiriusXM for having this instead of Robbie Dupree's other song.
Steal away.
Steal away with the girls in cars. The number two track is the title track, sung by Coco Beware, of course. Pile Driver!
Feels like an argument. It feels just like a bad driver.
Vince with his fucking t-shirt and his perfectly coiffed hair at the construction site. The Honky Tonk Man's theme, which you'll hear later on. I think it's the first time you hear it at the Garden because he kept using that weird song for a little bit.
Yeah.
Mr. Rick Derringer, we all know who he is. Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. Here we go. Coco's all over this fucking album. At number three, as mentioned, Honky Tonk Band's theme. Number four, little Rick Derringer with the theme for the tag team Demolition.
Yeah.
Great song. Slick has a song on here, JR.
Oh, yes.
He does.
We'll hear it later on in 87 and 88.
I'm not sure I ever heard that song.
Oh, of course you have.
Oh, you have. Oh, sure. Yes, you have.
There it is.
One of the greatest theme songs of all time.
Spud is stereotype music video that you ever see in your life.
Horribly right.
There have a girl that walks,
through the door. This is the Zligger dog at you, honey. Well, how come none of these were in the top 10? Better than Lisa Lisa and Cold Jam. Jimmy Hart with Crank It Up. Now, JR, this Crank next song, you and I know a little bit about. This is, well, I don't know, we saw a great music video for this song, if you remember. Hillbilly Jim and Gertrude singing Waking Up Alone.
Oh, yeah, this one's a classic. Yeah. To me, Hillbilly's whole run in Dirty F is justified by this song. That's right.
But JR and I have heard not many people have watched it, but there's a great underground music video for this song we know about. Yeah?
Another night, another fight. I may have this whole album memorized.
One of the backup singers, I think, is a New York Giants fan. Anyway. All right.
Could I be a hero to millions of fans? Tomorrow I'll be waking up alone. By God, I'm tough.
You can never do
Lord knows I'm big and strong. But nothing hurts me half as much as waking up alone. It's the best part right here. Ready? Hit the drums. Break it down. I am afraid to know you.
Kelly, you never thought you'd hear this song again, huh?
I was hoping I wouldn't. Yeah.
can never do better than Josh Richard. All right. Next is another JR favorite. Another JR favorite here from our own Saturday Night's Main Event announcer, Mr. Vincent K. McMahon. Stand back.
Stand back.
Make a lot of men drop.
Baby, watch them drop.
Speaking of rock and roll hoochie coo, that's on this album.
Yes, it is. Mean Gene
sings it. Yep. And then the WWF superstars sing If You Only Knew.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
Of course, you know who that song's about, correct?
Him? No.
Kelly, do you
Linda?
Know?
I can't remember.
Do you know Kel?
Kel, do you know?
What Stand Back is about?
Yeah, who it's about.
I thought it was just about him destroying all the other promoters.
No, it's about Andre the Giant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, listen to it.
Never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I like the facts. I like the music video from the Slammies where Savage is trying to play saxophone. I think that's even better.
Yes, of course.
Anyway, Pile Driver came out on this date, September 21st, 1987. And as you can see, it is one of the greatest fucking albums ever recorded. All right.
Stand back.
Stand back. That's a fact. Make a lot of men drop.
All right, let's go to watch them drop.
Let's go to the movie theater 2 days before, Friday the 19th.
Oh, quick question. Do you prefer Pile Driver or the wrestling album?
That's not fair. Not a fair question. Shit. Well, I guess to answer that, you would have to ask, is there any song on Pile Driver better than Piper's For Everybody?
Yes. Jive Soul Bro.
Yeah, no. Jive Soul Bro might be better than anything on. I mean, even Land of a Thousand Dances is good. Yeah, it's hard. What do you think, Kel? Is there anything better on either album than Jive Soul Bro?
Well, Demolition's song. Is,
oh, Demolition's theme is excellent. Yeah, but is there anything on the first wrestling album that's better than Jive Soul Bro?
I don't think so.
I mean, For Everybody is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the positives of the wrestling album is you get all the commentary like in between is real funny and stuff. But from song by song, I think Pile Driver blows it. I mean, I don't think it's too
flambe.
I don't think it's that close. I mean, I guess you get Real American on the other one. But I would take Demolition, Jive Soul Bro, and Honky maybe over anything on For Everybody and Honk, you're close. But I would definitely take Demolition and Jive Soul Bro over anything on
Jive Soul Bro, yeah, I agree. All right, let's go to the movie theater. Four movies came out the previous Friday, the 19th. All of them did very well, actually. These are all very well-known movies, believe it or not. All right, in number four, $5.37 million, a comedy that starred a very well-known actor, kind of well-known, not really well-known then, but a very well-known actor now. The movie is called The Pickup Artist.
Mm. It's not my son. He doesn't pick up shit. That's a dad joke right there.
No, he gets picked up.
Check out Dadcast, coming again someday when we have time. 1987 American romantic comedy film. Randy Jensen is a smart independent tour guide who beats a womanizer, Jack Jericho, at his own game. After a quick fling, her indifference only causes him to become smitten with her. Okay, so Randy's a female. Randy's too busy for romance, trying to keep her alcoholic gambler father, Flash Jensen, out of harm's way. Starring Molly Ringwald, Robert Downey Jr., Dennis Hopper, Danny Aiello, Vanessa L. Williams. Is that the Vanessa Williams? It is.
Yes.
So it's quite the cast of this movie here.
It is, right? I know.
It's even got Angie Kempf. Victoria Jackson. Is that the Victoria? It is. It's got Victoria Jackson.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Fred Melamed.
Well, you're heading into, you're going to see a lot of those SNL names because this the 87's about when that class kind of hit the show. You know, the Dana Carvey.
Oh,
Kevin
Dennis
Eames,
Hopper. Did I mention him too? It's got a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty powerful. Dana. But you're going to, Victoria Jackson, you're going to, for the next like 3 years, you're going to see a lot of those SNL names.
Harvey Keitel is us, by the way, too.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Harvey Keitel and Dennis Hopper?
It's got everyone.
And it's a comedy, which is even more insane.
Check it out.
All right. Next up at number three, which made $5.67
million,
one of the most unheralded horror movies of all time. It actually spawned a series, but the ones after, like the second one, were nearly not as good as the first one. And he's also one of the most unheralded horror movie villains. We never, I don't know if we asked Geek and Sassy there what they would do with this guy. We did for the other horror movie icons, but not him. The person, of course, I am speaking of is Pinhead, and the movie.
Do you have the Blu-ray set for that?
I do not have the Blu-ray set for Hellraiser, no. They never made one. They did make one, but no, I do not.
So is this the original?
This is the first Hellraiser, correct.
Let me find the first one here. The original Hellraiser, Frank Cotton, escapes from Cenobites. Hang on, let me see. Cenobites? Is that what it's called?
Cenobites. Cenobites. Yep, Cenobites.
In Morocco, yep. Frank Cotton buys a puzzle box from a dealer in a bare attic. When Frank solves a puzzle, hooked chains emerge and tear him apart. Later in the room is filled with swinging chains and covered with remnants of his body. A black-robed figure picks up the box, returns to original state, restoring the room to normal. Starring Andrew Robinson, Claire Higgins, Ashley Lawrence, Sean Chapman, Nicholas Vince, Oliver Smith, and that's it. I realize that the snippet I gave really doesn't tell much about the plot. Hellraiser is actually one of the few horror movies I've seen. Mike Filthball McKenna, as some of you may know.
God rest his soul.
Made me watch this one day at his house, and I remember for some reason. I just remember mm-hmm. Pinhead. So.
And yeah. Douglas Bradley. I don't know if you said his name, but Doug Bradley actually is the actor that plays Pinhead.
Lead Cenobite.
Yes. Cenobites. I forgot the actors that play the Cenobites. You probably said their names, but
that's him. Doug Bradley says lead Cenobite.
Yeah, lead Cenobite. At the time, he wasn't called Pinhead, but that's what he ended up being called.
You're Pinhead.
Anyway, there was like seven Hellraisers. I don't think they made a full. No, they did make a full box set. I think it was just the first three or four movies, because not every Hellraiser movie made it to the theater, because they definitely didn't have as good a staying power as Halloween or Friday 13th or a Nightmare. So, all right, at number two. This movie made pretty close to the others, $5.858 million. I think it's a comedy, might be a drama. A little Jim Belushi action here. It is called The Principal.
Of course, spelled P-A-L, because principals are your pals. Let's see here, The Principal. Rick Latimer, a high school teacher with a drinking problem, spotting his ex-wife Kimberly in a bar one night, Rick gets into a fight with the man she's with, culminating in his beating the hapless man's car with a baseball bat. Board of Education finds that Rick's behavior is reflecting poorly on the school district's image, and they unanimously decide to transfer him to another school in another district, Brendel High, a crime-ridden and gang-dominated institution. Starring Jim Belushi, Louis Gossett Jr., Ray Don Chong, Michael Wright, Jeffrey J. Cohn, and Jacob Vargas as Arturo Diego.
Okay, there you go. And the number one, movie of the weekend,
Judgment Night.
Yes, the number one movie of the weekend. It made $11 million and actually made a hell of a lot more money down the line. One of the best movies of the decade. Once again, last week we had Dirty Dancing. This movie takes a bit of a darker turn.
Oh.
Let's just say, hide the bunny rabbits.
Dave Sullivan is here.
No. I am speaking of Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, it's a lot darker than Dirty Dancing.
It's a lot darker than Dirty Dancing.
The main story is kind of similar. Dan Gallagher, successful, happily married Manhattan lawyer. His work leads him to meet Alex Zandra Forrest, an editor for a publishing company. Sorry. While his wife got startled. I thought she stepped into the room. While his wife, Beth, and daughter, Ellen, are out on town for the weekend, Dan has an affair with Alex. Though it was initially understood by both as a fling, Alex starts to cling to him. Starring Michael Douglas, Glenn Close, Ann Archer, Stuart Pankin, Ellen Foley, Fred Gwynne, the legendary one, Meg Mundy, J.J. Mm-hmm. Johnston, Jane Krakowski as Christine the Babysitter.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Tom Brennan.
It was Glenn Close's fairly hot cougar phase, which lasted a short time. But anyway, that was the big movie of the weekend. Actually, pretty good movie. That was Michael Douglas's bang every chick in the movie fucking phase that would go all the way to Basic Instinct 5 years later. Anyway, so there's your big movies of the weekend, and Fatal Attraction was the big one that weekend. All right, let's go to sports. Let's go to the Diamond as we're getting close. We're in the pennant races. Some divisions still being figured out. There were 9 games on this Monday. Your New York Yankees, Mr. Rosero, were off. The Blue Jays, Kelly, won in Baltimore at Memorial Stadium, 2-1. Do you remember Mr. John Cerruti with the win? 11-4. And Tom Henke, his 33rd save. The Mets won at Wrigley, 7-1 over the Cubs. Doc Gooden won his 15th. A couple of the divisions have already been wrapped up. Of course, Mr. Nelson, yours is not. In the American League East, at the moment, the Blue Jays with a half-game lead over the Detroit Tigers. 8.5 over the Brewers and the Yankees. Obviously, it's pretty much down to the Tigers and the Blue Jays. In the AL West, the Twins led Oakland by 4. In the NL East, this division was not over. The Cardinals led the Mets by 2.5. The Expos by 4. And in the West, that was pretty much wrapped up. The Giants had it won. They were already leading the Reds by 7.5. So that was pretty much in the bag as well. That big pennant race, Mr. Nelson. Are you comfortable with this half-game lead?
Certainly. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's in the bag, baby.
They're in the bag. More on that in the next show. All right. But guess what, guys? Not just baseball. It's time, JR. First time in a while. Take the field! It is. The 1987 NFL season is upon us. Of course, as you know, our defending champions, Mr. D'Amato's New York Football Giants, who won Super Bowl 21 at the Rose Bowl, beating the Denver Broncos. New season, but kind of an undercurrent going on in the NFL as labor issues were not good. So it is the day before, the 20th, week 2 of the NFL season. And this would be the last season of last week of regular players for over a month. There was a strike in 1987. After the Monday night game, the next day, the players walked. Week 3 was scrubbed. And then weeks 4, 5, and 6
were scrubbed as well.
Were scrubbed as well, yes. Weeks 4, 5, and 6 were infamously played by scabs.
Shane Falco.
Shane Falco, that's right. Well, we wish Shane Falco. Well, Shane Falco.
Shane Falco could start in like 17 teams right now, I think.
I know, yeah, pretty much. Yes. And Gene Hackman could coach half of them too.
It's got miles apart.
That's right. And then the regular players came back for week 7. Anyway, all right, gentlemen, are you ready? Who won it last year? JR, did you win it by a game? Right? Didn't you win?
I believe so. Yeah, Kelly lost.
All right,
as well.
All right, Kel.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen,
you're a loser.
Full boat of games, and I'm going to actually throw you a curveball here because I'm not sure how I'm going to do this, but one of the games on our schedule was a tie.
Hmm.
So you have to decide.
I'll have to guess which one. Okay.
Which one is the tie?
Okay. Your odds are better just to not guess any of them as a tie, Kelly. Just a heads up there.
I would only say this if there was no tie, because there's a tie.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought we had it on the sheet here, or whatever the standings, but oh, here they are. Yes, I won. I don't know. I just have it by week. I don't have the totals.
Okay, I'll have to add it. Well, you can add it up afterwards.
You
okay. All right. We'll begin at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, Mr. Nelson,
woo!
Where the Eagles host the New Orleans Saints, which could have been the case this coming Sunday,
mm-hmm.
if there wasn't one of the most incredible endings in the history of the NFL playoffs. JR, Saints Eagles from Philly.
I will take the Philadelphia Eagles to win that one.
Mr. Nelson.
Yeah, I'll go with the Eagles, too.
Eagles win 27-17. Mm. Mr. Cunningham threw for a $1.95. All right, we go to Lambeau Field in Green Bay. The Packers hosting the defending AFC champion, Denver Broncos. Kel?
Packers.
Okay.
I will take the Broncos on the road.
This was the tie.
Oh, wow.
They ended 17-17.
Oh, wait.
So we'll wipe that one out. You need to guys get that on.
By the way, have you noticed I switched to the ESPN NFL primetime music instead
of the
after 6 years or 7 years, I figure it's time to mix it up here on the PlayStation podcast.
Mix it up a little bit, all right.
For our football music.
Exactly. Let us go to the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis. The Colts hosting the Miami Dolphins, Mr. Rosero.
I will take Mr. Marino's Dolphins on that one.
Kelly?
I'll go with the Colts.
Okay. Gary Hogaboom threw for 282 yards, but the Dolphins win 23-10.
Yeah. Take that, Hogaboom.
Let's go to the
Hogabum.
Hogabum. Let's go to the Dog Pound in Cleveland. The Browns hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mr. Nelson.
Browns.
Oh, give me them Browns.
This certainly isn't 2017. Browns win 34-10. Yeah, right. It wouldn't happen now. Let's go to, I want to say it was frigid because it's September. Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. Marvin Lewis not coaching this team. I know. Marvin Lewis not coaching this team.
Surprisingly, yes.
No. The Bengals hosting the San Francisco 49ers, JR.
I'll take, that's a good one. I'll take the Niners.
Okay. Kel?
Yeah, me too.
Niners win by a point, 27-26. Joe Montana throws for 250. Let's go to Soldier Field in Chicago. The Bears host Bucko Bruce and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Kel.
Got to be the Bears.
The Bears.
Yes, Bears win 20-3. To Buffalo we go. The Bills hosting the Houston Oilers, JR.
Oh, tough one. I'll take Buffalo at home in this one.
Okay. Kel?
I'll go with the Oilers.
Jim Kelly throws for 293. Bills win 34-30.
Yeah.
Shootout at Heritage Stadium in Buffalo. Let's go down to Mr. Campbell's dump, known as Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta. Falcons hosting the Washington Redskins, Kel.
Should we guess the attendance instead of the score?
Add the two numbers together, and that's how many people were there.
Skins.
Falcons by a point. 21-20. Yes. Let's go out to the Coliseum in L.A. The Raiders hosting the Detroit Lions, JR.
The Raiders.
Yeah, I'll take the Raiders, too.
Raiders win comfortably, 27-7. Let's go to Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands. The defending world champions taking on the Dallas Cowboys, JR.
I will take the Gents.
Yeah, me too.
Danny White throws for 276. Cowboys by 2, 16-14. Let's go to the Kingdome in Seattle.
Even jobbing in 1987. Right now.
No. Let's go to the Kingdome in Seattle. The Seahawks host the Kansas City Chiefs, Kel.
Oh, jeez. Neither team was that good at the... Oh, no, actually, the Seahawks weren't that bad. I'll take the Seahawks.
Me too. I take the Chiefs at home. That's all. So Seahawks at home on this one.
Yes, Seahawks win comfortably, 43-14. Let's go to Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego. The Bolts hosting the St. Louis Cardinals, JR.
Yeah, I'll take the Chargers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Even though Neil Lomax threw for 457 yards, the Chargers win 28-24.
Could have been Bernie Lomax. It wouldn't have mattered. Chargers winning that game.
Well, this is the year the Chargers famously go, I think, 7-0 and then tank.
And then shit the bed, yeah.
Yeah, so much. I knew that.
Spoilers, Kelly!
Spoiler alert, the Chargers...
Let's go out to Anaheim, where the Rams host the Minnesota Vikings, JR.
I'll take the Rams.
Okay. Kel?
Well, I got to start making up some ground. I'll take the Vikings.
Wade Wilson throws for 285. Vikings win 21-16.
The Vikings.
And the Monday night game.
ESPN music earlier. I think I prefer it.
The Monday night game, while this house show was going on, I asked Greeny what he thought he was watching. JR, the J-E-T-S, Jets. Trying to rebound after the collapse of a year ago. taking on the New England Patriots. What do you think, Kel? You first.
Who's at home?
JR, think about it. I said Giant Stadium, so the Jets are home.
Patriots.
All right, I'm going to play it straight up. I'll go with the Jets. Give Kelly a shot here.
Kenny O'Brien throws for 313. Jets win comfortably, 43-24.
The boys don't let me down. All right, so
Chuck Hector rushed for 75 yards, and Al Toon had 89 yards passing.
Kelly, like many of his jobber favorites, is looking at the stars yet again. I win this week 10-8. Okay. We'll be back after this on prime time.
I'm curious to see let's see, if it's October 3rd, we may have, Kel, you'll have to give us, obviously, your picks ahead of time, but I think that's a scab week, JR, so you may want to go with conventional wisdom the next time we do picks. So there we go there. And quickly, before we wrap up, the college football season was underway. And so I'll just give the top 10 in the AP poll. I believe Penn State was your defending national champions. They beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. So your top 10 looks like this. It came out the next day. So Oklahoma 1, and then 1 through 10, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Auburn, LSU, Miami, Florida State, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Arkansas. So there's your there is your top 10. And that is all we have. And one of the longest pop culture records we've had in a while. It's been a quiet summer. We haven't had to do much other than movies, music, and baseball. So things heating up. And here we go.
It's longer than the first half of the MSG show, I think.
Yes. And in some cases, I'd rather listen to the pop culture report than watch Brad Rankins and Tiger Chung Lee again.
Yeah. All right. We go backstage where Gorilla Monsoon is chatting with Hibbly Jim, and he says, "Thank God I'm big. Lord knows I'm tough and strong, but nothing hurts me half as much as waking up alone." Jim talks the thrill of MSG in his battle tonight, which will be a real test. Says Harley Race is a tough critter, but he doesn't recognize him as king. Gorilla says Bobby Heenan makes him even more dangerous, and also says Heenan has filed a protest that Jim is hiding objects in his overalls. Gene says 1987 has been a tough year for Bobby. He's got no champions and a lot of blown chances. We then go elsewhere with Craig DeGeorge, a newest member of the announced team, as Craig Minivieri, who worked from 1987 to 1988, did play-by-play, of course, of Notre Dame football on NBC, CBS Sports Spectacular, the College World Series on ESPN, Major League Soccer, the XFL in later years, boxing, mixed martial arts, Syracuse Chiefs AAA baseball, on and on. Currently calls games for the Florida Panthers and some Miami Marlins games as well. So, been around the horn, old Craig DeGeorge. He is with Bobby Heenan, who has a big announcement. Andre the Giant is there as well. Bobby brings us back to WrestleMania 3. Andre gets screwed by the referee. Bobby's putting something together to shock the world, and the brain is up to something big. Andre says he'll prove that he's hungrier than ever, and what happened at WrestleMania 3 won't happen again. And he'll leave as the winner the next time. DeGeorge then with Gang and Slick, talking about their showdown with Hogan that ended in a draw. Slick says Hogan didn't defeat the Gang and he demands a rematch. Says Hogan's been a great champ and will want to know who the better man is too. Gang says he could feel he was stronger and better and took all of Hogan's shots and is still standing and wants the rematch. He said, "I'm still standing." Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gorilla is back with Randy Savage, looking to regain his IC title. Gorilla lays everything out, and Savage says Honky Tonk Man started all of this, and Savage has had to step up. Savage says he's done this before and come out on top as the future of the IC title. Gorilla says it's non-title, but Savage says if he wins this, he'll send a message to Honky that he's dealing with something, someone out of his league. And that brings us to our next match, the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers taking on the Dream Team. Even though those heels are slightly modified, reignited from years past, of course, as well as WrestleMania 3. Hammer seems so done with his team, like just everything about it. Just could use a change. Just kind of a waste at this point, saddling him with Dino Bravo. The Rougeaus have been a bit of aimless as well. Johnny V fires up his boys, and the Dream Team keeps hugging before we get started. Gorilla thinks the Dream Team's gone downhill since booting Beefcake. Ray and Dino open up with some feeling out and stalling and trading some basic offense. Dino tries for a high knee, but Ray dodges it and drills the hammer instead. Hammer comes in, and he and Dino hug it out, and then we reset. Ray drops Dino with a shoulder block and comes at him with a crossbody for two. Dino sprints to his corner and tags Hammer, who walks in to face Jacques. Hammer catches him with some elbows to the head and some chops, but Jacques reverses a whip, lands some shots of his own for two. Al says Hammer takes 10 minutes to get warmed up. As Jacques dodges a strike, he lands one of his own and sends Hammer to the floor. The Rougeaus double team a bit and keep working over Hammer's arm as Johnny V shows up with his ugly tights. Gorilla says his whole wardrobe costs $39.99, watch included. Hammer turns the tide on Ray and tags in Dino, punches away. Ray gets a hip lock, makes a blind tag. Both Rougeaus land a double drop kick, followed by a Jacques splash. Ray comes in, hooks a Boston Crab, but Hammer breaks it. Dino comes in and clubs Ray as Gorilla wonders what the ref is doing during all this. Hammer cracks Ray with a shoulder breaker for two and forces him to the corner and some chops. Gorilla says the nightmare in the Rosemont Horizon has crippled the Hammer. He hasn't been the same since. The Dream Team keeps pounding on Ray. I think Gorilla's more obsessed with that than either of these guys. The Dream Team keep pounding on Ray in and out of the ring, keeping him trapped in their side of the ring, going for pin covers while playing to the crowd. The crowd wakes up and starts to rally Ray as Johnny V stops in a commentary. Gorilla trolls him in his stupid wig. In the ring, Ray blocks a pile driver with a backdrop, but Hammer turns it to a sunset flip for two. Bravo comes in and slams Ray, drops a heavy elbow for two, and pounds the arm. Dino gets some awkward pin covers where Hammer actually stops the ref for counting for some reason. It was really weird. I thought we were getting like a breakup there. Like Hammer like stops the ref for some odd reason. Dino then tags Hammer, who tries to the figure four, but Ray kicks out of it. Things get sloppy. Everyone starts meandering around. Bravo slides outside. Hammer throws Jacques to the floor, and the Dream Team double team Ray as the crowd is quickly losing interest in all this. Dino hooks a bear hug and then tags Hammer, who tries for a suplex, but Ray blocks and reverses it. Hammer comes back but whiffs on an elbow drop. Dino tags in and drops Ray with a side suplex and then tries for an elbow drop but comes up empty. And this match is just kind of weird. Ray finally makes the tag, but Jacques comes in and battles Hammer, Bravo, and Johnny V, cleaning house of everyone. Jacques drops Hammer with a flying elbow and dodges a leg drop from Dino during the pin. Jacques drops a sleeper, but Dino breaks that up, and then Ray comes in and things break down, leading to a Dream Team double slam on Jacques, followed by a figure four as the bell rings. Johnny V fixes his wig at ringside. The Dream Team assume they won, but Fink reveals it was a mind-numbing draw. The Rougeaus clean house after the bell. Really odd way for this. I thought this whole thing was odd the whole way through. From the Dream Team's constant hugging and weirdness, playing to the crowd, a lot of random interference that the ref just watched and ignored. The finish was weird, too. It had its moments and was fine, but never really got going. Kind of felt like it was in slow motion and the crowd was checked out. I went 2 stars because it was just kind of fine, but I don't know. I expect more from these guys. It really felt like they just did not give a fuck on this night. What did you think, Scott?
Your match time, I mean, and talk about that. I mean, our draw we had last month, they were only 15 seconds short. This was a 20-minute draw. The fucking was 17:07. So they were like 3 minutes short.
Like, end it, which, please.
Which is merciful because it was a little rough. I gave this 2 stars. This Dream Team thing needs to end. I mean, it's evident that Hammer could fucking give two shits. Again, Beefcake was one thing because the premise of the Dream Team was to kind of grow Beefcake as a wrestler and help him out and move him along, and they were tag champs and they were awesome. But this is just a fucking waste of Hammer's time. No one gives a shit about Bravo. He's a big fucking slug. I think that the Rougeaus are a team to look out for, obviously. And I keep saying that the tag division is growing, and the Rougeaus are a team that can be respected and taken seriously as a contender. Johnny V's wig is hilarious, but as I've said before, and I'm curious your thoughts, Kel, because I'm not sure if I've said it with you, Johnny V definitely feels out of place in the WWF at this point compared to the other managers. Like he doesn't belong anymore. Like he's, you know, he was more of an 84 through 86 guy, and now he's kind of behind the eight ball with all these other managers are so far ahead of him, Bobby and mm-hmm. Jimmy. I think they deserve better.
I thought it was a little banner behind the eight ball.
Yes. Well, he's having an eight ball. The Rougeaus and the Hammer deserve better. Bravo is just so fucking – he's awful. And Gorilla's just tearing him up. Like, oh, former Canadian heavyweight champion, that was his good days. He's terrible now. It's like, is that like a shoot? Like, yeah, he is pretty terrible. You're right. I thought this match would be better, and even for a draw I was expecting a little more, but it didn't materialize. And the crowd definitely, I agree with you, JR, you would have thought that the crowd was going to get into this, and they never really did. I don't know if they just weren't in the mood for the Rougeaus or if they just hate Bravo. I'm not sure. But, Kel, there's no doubt that the energy level just completely pooped out, probably with like 7 minutes left in this match. But I gave it 2 stars.
Yeah, I went 2 stars too, but like a soft 2 stars because this was, yeah, not a good match. And the crowd, no, they didn't care. Both these teams really had no direction at the time. The Dream Team, you know, second incarnation of them, just wasn't going anywhere. Johnny V, no, you're right, Scott. He's out of place now. The wig thing is funny. Like, I love when the heel gets his head shaved and then pretends he's not bald and does that whole gimmick. That always gets over with me. But no, Johnny V's past his expiration date. Bravo is probably at the peak of his working abilities in the WWF, actually, because it's all downhill from here. Uh-huh. And it's not, his peak wasn't much. The Rougeos just aren't over as a babyface team and never were, really. I think part of it's the French-Canadian thing. Like, if the American fans find it hard, I think, to rally behind. But then, I mean, they love Rick Martel, so that really, yeah, I guess that's not much of a point by me. But no, they're just bland as babyfaces. I've made this point on other podcasts before, and they're really... you know, they get saved by their heel turn later, but as baby faces, they're going nowhere. Dream Team's going nowhere. The crowd doesn't care. There's not much heat at all until the very end. This one goes on forever. You know, it's going to be a time limit draw basically within the first 5 or so minutes, the way it's being worked. Yeah, JR, you mentioned how everyone's kind of like just not in sync or whatever. There's one funny spot where both Valentine and Bravo, like, they forget who was supposed to be the illegal man in the ring, and they both like scurry out of the ring at the same time.
The whole thing is, there's a lot of fuck ups in there. That Valentine breaking up the pin, I don't get at all. That was so random and odd.
Valentine's a little checked out. Just, you know, he'd been a featured player for a long time with an Intercontinental run and then a tag title run. And now he's mid-card at best. And then before WWF, he was a main eventer in all the other territories he was in. So this is kind of like a low point for him in 1987 after years and years of being at the top of the cards. And yeah, just it was so quiet at times. You could hear Jacques screaming from the apron, "Come on, Ray! Fight back, Ray! Let's go, Ray!
Cheer for Ray, please!
Yeah, let's go, Ray! Let's go, Ray!" sad.
Maybe they realized they weren't going to be good baby faces at this point. I don't know. You know?
Oh, yeah, no. The writing was definitely on the wall for them. And they're just, not part of the whole bigger picture for the tag scene. They're kind of forgotten. And then the typical... a crappy ending to a time limit draw where you're not sure if it's actually a time limit draw or what the hell happened. This was a waste of time. Like I said, a soft 2 stars for me.
All right. Let's go back to the ring where George Animal Steel battling Sika. Sika is out with Mr. Fuji and Kim Chi subbing for Kamala tonight. George Steel ambles out for his monthly mess as goes right at Kim Chi at the bell, but Sika catches him from behind and clubs away. Sika keeps stomping and punching away as the crowd tries to rally old George. Fuji jabs the animal with a cane and a couple of times, and Sika keeps the pressure on in the corner, choking away against the ropes. Steel pulls out an object and jabs it to the gut of Sika and then to the head. Steel kicks away and then goes outside and chases Kim Chi and throws a chair in the ring. Steel comes in and Sika smacks him with a chair for the DQ. Sika keeps pounding on Steel as Al wants to know what the fuck the ref is doing. Steel fends off Sika and lands a shot with the chair to a pop and then lays in shots all the way to the back. Steel then chases Kim Chi back to the ring and beats on him, tries to rip off the mask, but Kim Chi escapes. This sucked. Steel sucks. Sika can only do so much. Garbage. Dud.
Go ahead, Cal. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say dud too. Talk about a time warp with Johnny V or whatever being out of place. Sika and Steel were in the territory in 1980, so there's God. Steel's still over like crazy, and he always would be. But no, there was nothing to this at all. Total waste of time. I was actually kind of hoping that Kim Chi got unmasked, and this would be some noteworthy thing that I totally was unaware that happened, but no, he kept his heat and got away.
Graham on the history. In the funny papers, we
all know. Surprised they didn't use this. I heard it the other day. Like for Sika. Listen, how racist this song is.
this dude? Well, this cat's name is Alley-Oop.
It gets worse, but I'm surprised they didn't use something like this for like Sika or these other Samoans.
Yeah, because this sounds Samoan.
You know what I'm saying? It's like he talks about the jungle and stuff.
Well, it was Alley-Oop was a
cartoon comic. Yeah.
Pavement.
Anyway,
I guess it could fit Steel too. He's kind of a caveman. All right, go ahead. I heard it the other day. That made me think of this stupid match.
Graham on the history of WWE.com did not have an official time, so I actually timed the match, and it was mercifully short, just 2:58.
Still too long.
Yeah, I mean, the match is a dud. The only redeeming quality of it is at least George Steele isn't something no one gives a shit about. It's a throwaway crap match that's there to spell the crowd after that dreadful draw and then for our next match. So I wasn't, believe it or not, I wasn't that upset only because, like, he wasn't, you know, George Steele wasn't ruining somebody else's career by being in this match because no one gave a shit about him or Sika.
He's ruining my life by wasting time.
Well, that too. But it's only 2:58, so it's not the end of the world. Why he's still on here, I don't know. I don't know where Kamala went. I know we start getting the beginning of Kamala's backstage issues, and we'll document more of them over the next couple shows. But Kamala starts being a pain in the ass, but we'll get more into that later. Which is why I still understand. Maybe they didn't want to stiff Kim Chi out of a payout. So, I mean, I don't know why Fuji was there. Well, Fuji was I think Fuji was managing.
Well, they were co-managing. Weren't Sika and Kamala kind of a team?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had been wrestling on the circuit.
Yeah, I think it's why Kimchi's out there.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. So, all right. So there you go. It's shit, and 2:58 is your match time. Why don't we just save the time and move on?
All right, Hillbilly Jim.
Why don't we play that song again?
Hello. Hillbilly Jim woke up not alone for this night here and taking on the King Harley Race. Big class war here. Hillbilly Jim back to take on the always entertaining King. Harley and Heenan head out for their regal with their regal music, getting booed the whole way. Al cracks up as Harley's smiling, this goofy smile. He says he always has a miserable expression. Why is he smiling tonight? Jim gets a nice reaction as he enters to his hit song. Al puts over Jim as a cuddly teddy bear that dances and does everything and talks about how he's still young. Gorilla talks about his special boots that were, of course, gifted by Hulk Hogan, talks about Jim's granny. After some posturing, we get a lockup into a Jim headlock that gets broken quickly. Jim blocks a Race suplex. He gets one of his own for two. Jim misses an elbow drop as Heenan barks orders from ringside. Race starts to lay in methodical strikes and then slugs Jim right over the top to the floor. Race follows out, but Jim shoves him to the post and slides back in. Race makes it back inside, and Jim bops him with two headbutts that Race no-sells, and then Jim pokes him in the eyes. Race comes back and slugs Jim to the floor and heads out and slowly pile-drives him on the floor and then drops a falling headbutt in a wild sequence. Race tries to headbutt again, but Jim dodges it. Race smashes into the concrete. Jim then grabs his face and slams it to the ground again. Both make it back inside, and Race shakes off the pain and gets to work on offense as Heenan comes over and spars with Gorilla. Race slams Jim for two and drops a hard knee to the head for a one count. Race pulls Jim up and nails him with a clothesline and lands another falling headbutt. Race goes for a slam, but Jim counters it to an inside cradle for two. Race pops up and buries a knee, but Jim starts to mount to come back with punches and headbutts. Race eats a boot on a charge, but Jim misses a splash on the middle rope. Race goes to the middle rope and hits a headbutt for the win. Pretty fun and hella stiff, man. This is, especially the shots on the floor. They were gross, considering this is just a fucking house show. Jim looked really good here, I thought, fighting hard and taking some rough offense. Maybe his best match. And Race shined, as always. I went 2 stars, which may as well be 5 when you look at this thing on paper. But some of those bumps on the floor are fucking sick. What'd you think, Kel?
Yeah, it was okay. I love Harley, but not much was going on in the early goings. I kind of zoned out. But then, of course, we'd go spill to the outside, and then Race pile drives him just randomly. Typical Race, you know. I think a pile driver on the concrete should probably be safe for like a heated blood feud match,
or now it's so random,
an injury angle. But Race would always do that. I mean, he would always just. He treated the pile driver as just like a suplex. It was no big deal. The fans weren't into this one, though. And Hillbilly's definitely stale as all hell as a character. And the fans don't care anymore.
And yeah, Gorilla and Lord Al weren't even really too into it. They were talking to Heenan quite a bit throughout. But this was a total broomstick match by Race. Mm-hmm.
Jim took some rough offense, though.
Yeah, Jim didn't. Yeah, he just didn't have much left, and he's pretty much a jobber to the stars now. And you wouldn't see him wrestle quite a lot after this. Very random or very rare. I did like Andre coming out after the match, though. That was cool.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
Save it.
Anyway, okay, I'll save it. 1.5 stars for me.
Fucking Debbie Downer tonight.
Kel will be waking up alone in the office. all right. Your match time, 8:37. I gave this 5 stars. No, I didn't. I gave this 2 stars. Yeah, I agree, JR. One thing I love about and Greedy and I were having this conversation today about like certain guys and their setup moves and how really good they look. And one of them is Harley's headbutt, which he just always hits it so stiff, and he just he sells it so amazingly, and he looked awesome, and the floor work was really out of control, like the pile drivers and like the they were just falling all over each other. It was a lot more physical than I thought it was supposed to be. So I was pretty impressed. I was pretty impressed. There were times it was a little slow, but I mean, you're dealing with two guys that work slow, so it's not, not that big a deal. And for a guy that's pretty much like, a roll of the dice when it comes to matches, Hillbilly, looked really good here, better than he probably should have been. But not much more to say here. Again, 2 stars, 8:37 your runtime. But as JR mentioned, or as Kelly mentioned, actually, a big surprise at the end of the match, JR.
Mm-hmm. And that is the arrival of Andre the Giant. Shows up at ringside, raises Harley Race's hand as Bobby announces him to the crowd. The fans are all over him with boos, and he slowly looks out with disdain. So kind of like the last time we saw him, just kind of gets acknowledged, comes out, just gives a nasty look and says, fuck you, and walks away. So I really like that. That was cool.
I thought it was cool because the national audience got to see it earlier in the show because they did the interview, and now the local audience got to see Andre, and who was fucking soaked. I never met a guy sweat so much in my life than Andre. My God, his shirt was sticking to him.
Well, he's like 520 pounds.
I know. Just his presence is amazing, and it was good to see him back. And that tells you, though, that the Hogan-Andre stuff is obviously not over, which is a good thing, too. So. All right, before we continue, JR, the Fink takes the mic.
And takes us through our next card, right? That's about it?
Yes, okay. Which will be on October 16th, which we will have in 2 shows from now because we do have something in between. Which then takes us to our main event. Which
it does.
Which I know I always say main event last match, but you could argue this is just as big a main event as what we had earlier,
Poor Scott. He's so jumpy with this stuff now. He gets called out so often on it. Yeah. That is Macho Man Randy Savage taking on the Intercontinental Champion Honky Tonk Man in a non-title match. Interesting here, Savage edging into his face turn, mostly just annoyed with Honky's boasting and bravado, but he's basically a face. Honky's been a bit of an MSG MVP of late. We'll see if he holds up. Non-title, Savage looking to prove he's better, but no shot at taking the title yet. Honky and Jimmy dance out to boos, but Savage and Liz get a big ovation as they march out. Al's just gushing over Liz, and Gorilla notes that the fans are cheering. Al also talks about Hart being shrewd and getting the title off the line in this one. Savage chases at the bell, and Honky bails, but Savage darts out and chases him back in. Honky levels Macho as he slides in and clubs away, but drops his head, and Savage boots him in the face. Savage snaps Honky's neck across the top rope and spikes his face into the apron, and then Savage yanks Honky back in as Gorilla now says he just wants to punish Honky and Hart for all the shit they've been talking. Savage goes out and grabs Hart, who was getting into it with Liz, but Honky makes a save and slings Macho back inside. Hart stalks Liz again and hops on the apron, but that backfires as Honky slugs the mouth by accident. Savage takes back over, drills Honky with a hard elbow to the head. Honky then catches Savage with a shot and goes back to work with the strikes. Savage gets tangled in the ropes. Honky kicks away and dances. Savage breaks free. Honky stays all over him with elbows and kicks, and then Jimmy yells gorillas. Honky comes out and stalks Liz. Savage recovers and jumps Honky from behind, throws him inside, aggressively working him over. Savage yanks Hart into the ring and chases him outside, but Honky clobbers Macho from behind with the megaphone. Honky slides in and keeps blocking Macho from coming in. Macho finally slides in, but Honky slugs away. Savage comes back with a nice crossbody for two, but Honky pops up and cracks him with the right hand. Honky slams Savage and heads to the middle rope and lands a fist drop for two. Honky then gets a clothesline for two and goes for the shake, rattle, and roll, but Savage blocks it with a backdrop and drills Honky, sending him to the floor. Savage goes up top and pelts him with an axe handle, and back inside, Savage slams Honky, goes up top, and hits the big elbow for the win and huge pop. Red hot match, great heat, nonstop effort. Savage is amazing. Honky continues to shine. Savage gets a cathartic win to get him rolling as a face, sets him up for a title match in the future. Great way to close the show, and Honky's been a revelation to me of late. We've talked about it week to week. I've talked about it, or we'll be talking about it too when we do our greatest wrestler ever lists. Obviously, we debated that last week, Scott, but I really enjoyed him, and he did nothing to change that here. I went 3.5 on this one.
Your final match time is 11:56. I gave this 3.5 stars as well. There's no doubt, regardless of what the plan would be, that Randy Savage is a big piece of this future. There's no doubt about it. He is the man. This is the first, because this is the first time. Obviously, it's relatively new, obviously, but this is a big test for Savage because it's the first time that Savage and Hogan are on the same show as babyfaces to a certain extent. So with having Hogan in the middle, Savage gets his opportunity here on the stage as a pseudo babyface. And the crowd was into him. Crowd was a little burnt at the end, so the pop may not have seemed as impressive, but I think it was. And they were blasting the music tonight, so I think the music kind of cut off a lot of the juice of some of the pops.
Yeah.
Honky has surprised me. I will say that. He is definitely – I still don't think he's the greatest in the ring, but he's definitely gotten a lot of enough heat to really jazz these baby faces and Savage as well. Obviously, Savage needed as much as Steamboat, which is kind of funny to say. But it worked out really well here. And being a non-title match, I think a lot of people may have assumed that Savage was going to win. It was a great brawl. And for me, this was the first example of really the greatness that is the storytelling of Savage as a wrestler. Because as a heel, particularly early on here in the WWF, he wrestled a certain way. A lot of stalling, but great work in the ring. But obviously, as the heel, he did a lot more dictating. Now, at least for the next several months, you're going to see the prototypical great way that the babyface Savage wrestles. He takes an unbelievable shit kicking. He's great at it. He's great at being a face in peril. If any wrestler in any academy, whether it's NXT or whatever, watch Savage babyface matches, because nobody creates organically the sympathy of the audience like he does. He just does an amazing job of really sucking you in to his plight and getting him to get you to want to get out of it, to cheer him out of it. And that's the greatness that's Randy Savage. The brawl was great. Honky did the best he could. I mean, they're throwing trash in the ring at him. I mean, it's pretty. Yeah. It was pretty impressive. It was pretty impressive. It was a big babyface win. I love Savage's alternate olive tights. I always like those. Those are usually TV tights. He usually didn't really wear those on house shows. That's usually like his Saturday's main event tights. But protects everybody and gives you that feeling that, well, maybe Savage is going to finally break this this shit show of a title reign, you know, because there's a big taping the following Wednesday that we'll be talking about next week. So big win, Kel, for Savage, a good test for him in the big building. First time we've seen him at the Garden since February, and sorely missed, my opinion, and a good win for him, and a good match.
Yeah, I really like this match. If I'd seen it before, again, it must have been years ago because I didn't remember it at all. Yeah, the crowd heat, I thought, was really hot. Like, because Savage, his face turn was interesting in that he never really had that one moment where he turned face. He just sort of slowly turned face. I guess it comes shortly, the official moment, but it was a very gradual thing. The MSG crowd loves him. I mean, he as a heel, he was already getting a lot of cheers and pops. And now that they can cheer for him, they love him. Liz was looking particularly hot tonight. I had to mention that because mm-hmm. that was... Yes, and as hot as the crowd, basically. Action, like, this whole thing with Honky is great because the crowd knows he's a phony. They think he's a sham champion. And it's because he's not a good wrestler. I mean, that's his gimmick, is that he's only, you know, really a step or so above being a job guy in the fans' eyes. That somehow is just, like, you know, fall into the title ass backwards, total fluke win over Steamboat. He shouldn't be the champion, but he keeps winning. Like, the crowd is actually angry that this guy mm-hmm. is the Intercontinental champion. It angers them. They're throwing garbage at him. He's got great heat. It's real heat to the point where, you know, the fans, I could see them like jumping the rails and taking swings at Honky. Like, he's really hated. As hated as probably anybody we've seen since Piper's peak, probably. Just real hatred from the fans. And him and Hart together are a great team. They were perfect for each other. Hart, you know, when he's with Honky, he kind of amps up the healing. And he was really, really aggressive in this one. Chasing after Liz, and sort of there was a lot of stuff going on outside the ring as well. Just a lot to this match. I really liked it. And we get a really good finish because it's a non-title match, and Honky wasn't going to be losing the title anytime soon. They wanted to ride that train, milk it for as long as it was worth, because it was really working at this time. Because he was a guy where the fans, you know, they bought it anytime he was going at someone. They thought, well, they have the chance of beating him because Honky should lose. I mean, so it could be Savage, it could be Steamboat, it could be Jake Roberts. It was exciting because one of these guys should win the Intercontinental title from this loser. But here, you know, you give Savage the clean win. Cathartic, like you said, JR. The crowd gets the big celebration at the end. Not a screw job ending or Honky running away with the title or count out sort of thing. Sure, Savage doesn't get the belt, but it's a happy ending for the fans. And the match was worked at a really good pace. Savage was awesome in it, of course. I think Honky is great in this role.
Mm-hmm. No, he's been fantastic.
And it's just right, you know, it's just simmering. Like, the crowd just is just desperate for one of these baby faces to beat them. This is great. I wish that they could book guys like this in the WWE today and have titles that meant something and that the fans really just want a victory so bad and there's real heat. Like, this is, it's stuff like this that I really miss about mm-hmm. wrestling today. Mm-hmm. That is the heat.
Agree.
Like this and the passion from the fans. This was an excellent match and 3.5 stars for me.
Yeah, the passion's around booking now versus, like, actual on-screen. But whatever, that's an argument for another podcast.
Yeah.
All right, let's quickly go through the awards. We've been here quite a while tonight. All right, match of the night, I'm going Savage Honky.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so put that in
here. It was close. So the tag between Strikeforce and Islanders was really awesome, too. I had to really debate this one, actually.
Tough. I mean, Hogan Gang being your third best match makes it a pretty good show. All right, worst match, I went with Sika, George Steele.
I went with Rangins and Chunger. That was horrible.
Yeah, I think Steele and Sika was pretty dreadful, though. I'll take that one.
All right. All right. The Hogan Award for the MVP, I went with Savage. I thought he was fucking phenomenal in the show. He felt like a star, looked like a star, acted like one, and he was great in that match.
Absolutely.
Yep, I agree.
Absolutely.
All right. Our Uncle Elmer Award for the biggest bum on the night, I went with George Steele. I think he sucks. I think he sucked in this match. I think he's done. I think he's cooked. I think he needs to go away. Second show in a row. Goodbye.
The only reason the only reason I may not totally agree with you is that I already know that he's a bum before this match even happened.
So he's still the worst on the night.
I know, and I hate to do this, but I almost want to give it to Morocco because he was just that. Oh, he was just so disappointing.
Not even close.
So disappointing, but
that statement's disappointing.
But I'm I don't know, maybe Steele needs to borrow some Diana Ball. I don't know, but anyway, I'll go with George Steele because he is fairly terrible.
For me, it was obviously Scott Casey. I think he just he needs to go because he's got nothing left. He's slow. He's bloated. The crowd doesn't like him. He's useless.
Went by that criteria, the show would be over. Scott would be gone. Slow. Bloat. I'm looking. All right, best moment we have.
You're waking up alone.
Huh?
You're waking up alone.
I wish. All right, our best moment of the night. I went for the second show in a row. I went Andre. I thought his arrival out there and that moment, the crowd heat, they're slow building it so well. And I love the way he comes out. He's kind of raises Harley's hand and looks around. It looks like such an asshole. He's so angry. That was for the second show in a row. That was my favorite moment.
I agree.
I like that a lot, too, but I went with Savage getting the clean win and the big pop and the victory celebration. I thought that was a great moment.
All right. So there you go. Me and Scott in agreement on a lot of these. Kelly off the reservation, as always. And definitely, yes, Don Morocco, LOL.
Yes, I wrote that. I wrote that today because I knew not even Hogan was that bloated tonight compared to him.
It's ridiculous.
No, I think he was so bloated, he may have to change the name to the Morocco Award.
We'll see. He's going to win a couple more.
All right. Not even close to RCD, so.
I like this show a lot. We have 2 3.5-star matches, a 3-star match. I didn't think, there's some crap, but like we said earlier, Scott, it was short in the Steel match. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind that opener that you guys didn't like. I liked Harley and Hillbilly enough, too. I thought the promos were good, the Andre moment. I went on the upper end of my house show grades, 6.5, which is one of my, usually I save that for like a higher end house show, and I thought this was it. I thought it was better than last month by a bit, and probably the best show we've had in a while in MSG. Best of the year for me.
I like the show a lot. You obviously did.
It's the best since May of 86 for me.
Oh my God. I wouldn't go that far. I thought this was a good show. This was a good show. Love Savage. It was great to see Savage and Hogan on the same night. It's the first time in quite a while. But I thought our show last week was the show in August was better. So I'm going to give this 5.5. I liked it a lot. I didn't like it better than last month. But there was some good moments on this show, and seeing Savage was great. But the George Steele stuff sucked. The opening match sucked. I was disappointed in Morocco, but Hogan and Savage both were awesome, and the tag match was great. And so I'm gonna go 5.5. Good, but not better than last month, Kel.
Yeah, I'm in the middle. I'm 6 out of 10. 3 matches on the show that are easy recommendations for anybody to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The tag, the Hogan match, and then the main event with Savage, all good to great. And then you just had your usual, MSG card filling crap. So I watched it in one go, and I was getting a little burnt out by the time of the Hillbilly Harley match for sure. But the main event or the last match was great. So it was there's way worse MSG shows than this one to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And with 3 legitimately good to great matches on it. So, yeah, 6 out of 10.
All right. There you have it. Pretty good show here. We wrap up our stretch of 5 MSG shows in a row. We are back to Saturday Night's Main Event. The return, October 3rd, 87 edition. We'll have a very special guest. We'll keep that one under wraps until next Monday. Kelly, we'll talk to you in about a month or so. Because, Scott, we do have Saturday Night's Main Event next week. Then we have a week off. That's Rumble weekend. So we're going to take that week off. Yes. And then we'll be back 2 weeks after that, the beginning of February, with the October 87. Another special guest for that one, too. So we'll save those two for when they drop. Anything you got going on, Scott, you want to plug? Main event?
Well, we have there's a main event up on PlacemanNation.com right now. A tremendous show we did last week. Nate and I did our end of we did our 2017 awards, both WWE and other, and then myself, Steve Willey, and Mr. Chad Campbell did our New Japan Classic match pick number 2, which was Antonio Inoki versus Andre the Giant. Speaking of Andre, from December of 74. Hmm. Which was we actually did a lot of New Japan segment. We recapped Wrestle Kingdom and a bunch of other great. So that was a great segment. It was a great show. So please check it out. Episode 92. It's on the site right now. The next main event will be next week. We will, of course, preview the Royal Rumble and NXT TakeOver. And we will have our next TNA Classic pay-per-view recap. We will do the second weekly pay-per-view from, I think it was June 26th, I think, of 2002. So that'll be next week. But please check out the main event episode from last week. It was exceptional. Great end-of-year show.
Kelly, you got anything going on, WorldCast?
Yeah, earlier today, a special episode of WorldCast dropped, WorldCast What If, where we look at the first Mid-Atlantic show that just was dropped on the network. They dropped a good almost 2 years' worth of stuff, 81 yep. to 83. So we're looking at the first one, September 12th, 1981. Great roster that they had at the time.
Super deep.
Yeah, yep. Super deep, talented guys. A very polished TV program, very different than World Class. And we had a blast doing it. We went on for like 90 minutes talking about all kinds of stuff, getting into the history of Mid-Atlantic too. And yeah, check it out. It was a really fun show.
That awesome. Shadow thing they do coming out of break is a little weird.
Like, well, yeah. By that oh, yeah. Matches. There's a lot of like kitschy sort of effects, but it's charming. You know, it's part of the old television production.
I agree. And seeing Piper manage Abdul the Butcher is fucking insane.
Yeah.
So awesome. Him and like Ole are like this awesome tag team. It's like crazy. I'm like, I'm taken aback by it. It's so much fun to watch. It really is.
It is. Yeah.
All right. So check out all that. Like I said, we'll be back next week. Also, check out the ongoing results in the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Project. Those have been rolling out pretty much 3 times a week or so far. Yep. Newest one dropped today. We're working our way through the honorable mentions. Everyone ever who got any vote in this project is getting recognized. So I think it was like 320-ish. They're all getting a post, and there's some data in there of, you know, highest vote, highest voter, and then some quotes from the voters and some funny jib jabs from our writers as well. So check that out as we move toward the top 100. And of course, we'll have a lot of audio coming as well, breaking down our individual lists. So facebook.com/placemanation, Twitter place number 2 B Nation, Tumblr as well, Instagram 2. Check all that out. Download our free Vintage Vault ebooks on the right hand side of the website, placemanation.com/amazon to shop as well. All that said, I'm Scott. No, you're Scott. I'm JT. That's Kelly. We're out. Talk to you all next week. I'm going to bed.